It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott's here. Mary Jo Foley's here. So are the new Surface devices. We'll show you every single one of them, including a cute little video with Panos Panay and his daughter. We'll also talk about Stephen Sanofsky's upcoming book. Paul says, I'll read it so you don't have to. And a little more on Call of Duty, that new remaster. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly. Windows Weekly comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. Stay in control when it comes to your company's access points and authentication. LastPass makes enterprise-level security simple for your remote workforce. Check out LastPass.com/Twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 671, recorded Wednesday, May 6th, 2020, where the apps aren't. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by Thinkst Canary. Detect attackers on your network while avoiding irritating false alarms. Get the alerts that matter. For 10% off and a 60-day money-back guarantee, go to canary.tools/twit. And enter the code TWIT in the How Did You Hear About Us box. And by Barracuda. Did you know that 91% of all cyber attacks start with an email? To uncover the threats hiding in your Office 365 account, get a secure and free email threat scan at barracuda.com/windows. And by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage. Thinking about moving your data storage to the cloud? Wasabi is enterprise-class cloud storage at one-fifth the price of Amazon S3 and faster than the competition, with no fees for egress or API requests and no complex storage tiers. Start a free trial at wasabi.com. Enter the code Windows. Well, hello. It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. This is the show all about Microsoft. Mary Jo Foley from allaboutmicrosoft.com, her CDNet blog, Paul Thurrott, his blog, Thurrott.com. I wanted to start off by thanking you, Mary Jo, because we do this thing called After Hours. Paul's been part of it before with the Ask Me Anything, and you were a judge with Andy Iannacco last Friday for our Iron Chef, our cooking competition.
It was fun.
You were great. Andy was great. The cooks were great, given the weird ingredients.
I know. Those ingredients, if I had been given those, I don't know what I would have done.
Anthony Nielsen, who produces the After Hours extravaganza, went to the grocery store, took his life in his hands, wore a mask, bought snails, pickled cactus, and dragon fruit. And then as an extra surprise, the bag within the bag, dried beef in a jar.
I know.
It's hard to think of
anything. I didn't even know they had dried beef in a jar. Oh, I didn't even know that existed.
It's wet dried beef, which seems odd. Mm-hmm. Oh, mm-hmm. Anyway, it was great. I won't say who won. You got to watch it. It's on our Twit YouTube feed.
And you know what's crazy, Leo? I had never met Andy before.
What?
No. Nope.
Oh, you two were great. I didn't know you'd gone to cooking school.
Yeah, I did. I went to cooking school when I first moved to New York. I went to a vegetarian cooking school.
Well, there's a future in that. That's for sure.
There is.
We're running out of meat.
Yeah,
it'll all be dried beef in a jar from here on out.
It'll be beans, beans, beans.
You said something interesting, though. You said I was fed up with the tech journalism.
I was.
Because when you say I went to cooking school, you assume, oh, that's before she found her, you know, her calling. Yeah. Right out of college or something. But no, this was actually you found your calling and you were ready to call it quits.
Well, I was working at in a place where it was a bad match for me. It was a long-form journalism magazine where they gave you 6 months to write one story. And I'm all
painful.
About quick turnaround things. Yeah. So for me, it was just like torture. And so I said, I got to get out of here. So I went to cooking school thinking I might just throw away tech and go to become a chef.
Well, we're very grateful that you did not. Although I think Paul will testify to this. I don't think there are any tech journalists who haven't many times thought, I'm giving this up. This is awful. This is the worst.
Yeah.
I don't want to
do this. Actually, so the thing that strikes me most in tech is You're not the only one who's done the kind of cooking thing. Like Raphael went to Cordon Bleu. I think there are a lot of people who, you know.
I know.
And then a lot of us are musicians or artists.
Yep.
And I find that to be kind of interesting. I mean, I don't really cook that much either, but I wish I knew how to play an instrument. I don't, you know. But it's striking to me how many people in this industry have this kind of creative side as well.
Steven Sinofsky plays the flute, I believe.
Oh, I'm sure he does.
I'm just making that up.
He's coming up later in this episode.
I know.
The Pied Piper of Terrible.
There is so much to talk about today. I keep waiting for the news to just die out, to taper off, you know, and everybody goes, you got nothing to say.
We have news and we got news on the horizon.
There's news and news on the news.
Yeah.
Well, let's start off because instead of having a surface event, do you think they planned a surface event and then just gave up on it? Or
yes.
Yeah.
Yep. They do one every spring.
So instead of doing that, they just put out a big long press release. And there are new Surface.
Many.
Many. And even new Surface headphones.
Yep.
How did that get? Is that?
So first, let's start. You're doing it out of order, I guess. You want to start.
Let's leave people in suspense on that one.
We'll get to that. But first, Paul is going to do a riff on Panos Panay's post.
Well, okay. Yes, I guess. So
I'm going to accompany him on a drum and a tambourine.
Snap your fingers, everybody.
Well, so Steven Sinofsky is going to come up a couple of times in this episode. And the first one is related to this post because back when Steven was running Windows. In particular, I would say Windows, it was during the Windows 8 timeframe, really. He used to blog a lot. And by a lot, I mean both frequency and in length. And he would write these astronomically long posts. Sometimes, I Mary Jo knows these stories too. I mean, we know from people on the inside that he would bypass PR and just write gigantic things all on his own without any feedback or without telling anyone he was doing it. And they were hard to read. Not because they were technical, they were just, you know, they were just too long. So I used to write these posts where I would analyze what he wrote and I would break it down to what he actually said. And so if you could imagine like an 8,000 word post, I mean, it's a good 500 words in there somewhere, you know? So this past week before the Surface launch, Panos Panay, who now runs both Windows and Surface, wrote his first, I would call it major missive, you know, to the troops. And it's not very long. It's kind of the anti-Sinofsky thing in a way.
But yeah, instead of a long, in-person speech, he just wrote a few paragraphs, said, okay, that's it, I'm done.
Yeah, and it highlighted there were three big topics. You know, you get through the pleasantries in the beginning. Yeah, we're all suffering from a pandemic. And then it's like, we're going to look to the future, listening to customers, blah, blah, blah. May 2020 update is coming this month. And we're changing our plans for Windows 10X. And then he talked a little bit about build. Now, the big part of that, of course, is the Windows 10X.
Yeah.
Thing. But as far as the post goes, and as far as my comparison with Sinofsky, it's interesting. You know, it's like he wrote too little about topics that I think are very important, right? And so
Think he was picking and choosing what to say and what not to say. I don't think he was just being succinct. I think he was deliberately, I wouldn't say misleading, but like leaving things out.
Okay, but whether it was purposely misleading or not, it was misleading. And I think that's part of the problem. So one of the examples I'll just raise off the top of my head was he talked about coming innovation in Windows that was going to happen in the holiday quarter of this year and the holiday quarter of next year. Now, this should set off alarm bells because we've talked about how they changed the schedule for Windows development, where we have a first half of the year release, an H1 release that's major and has new features, lots of new features. And then we have an H2 release for the second half of the year that really doesn't have much in the way of new features, but it's mostly kind of a fit and finish thing and is the longer support version for businesses. So when you hear that, you think, wait, is he signaling that they're going to switch back to the old way of doing things where they have two major releases, right? No, you're right. The answer is no. Because if you keep reading, he talks about Windows 10X next. And Windows 10X, he uses some of the same phrases in his discussion about Windows 10X. And I think what he's really saying is that the innovation he's talking about is really coming via Windows 10X
next year.
In the second half of the year, not Windows 10 for desktop. But it's, you know, it's again, not misleading, right? But maybe, and I don't want to even say poorly written. I don't mean it like that. But
it sets the,
you read it, and you're like, wait a minute, what is he saying here? And it kind of makes, you know, for me, I went back and reread it a bunch of times. I wrote, you know, and then I wrote the article, obviously. But anyway, yeah, I find it interesting. Here we are, you know, so many years later, decade later. And it's like, oh, God, are we really going to have to, like, I hope it's not like this every time. Anyway,
I really do think he was trying to avoid saying certain things because his presentation style is very upbeat when he talks, right? He doesn't want to come in and go, so guys, guess what? Neo, it's not coming this year. 10X is a mess. We don't think we can even deliver it till next year. Like that's not his style, right? His style is, you know what? We have magical things happening.
Oh, you've just raised like two major issues, if you don't mind. You're right. That is his style. And so one of the ways, one of the minor ways you see that in the post is he says, hey guys, the next major release to Windows 10 is coming. We're calling it, you know, the May 2020 update. It's coming this month. And then you move on from there. Well, you know what? That's interesting, right? Because what he doesn't say is that thing that we all heard on the back end, which is that it is coming this month. It's coming 2 weeks later than expected this month because there's a zero day that they're going to address before they release it. He doesn't say that. Right. He just gives you the it's coming this month. You know, when he wrote it, it was May 3rd or 4th or whatever. And this month, you know, it's 30 days to go. It could be any time. Mm-hmm. Typically, it would have happened next week. But what we're hearing is it's not. He doesn't mention that. It's fine. Not a big deal. But the other thing I think the other thing you just brought up, which I think is really interesting, is the 10X bit, because we knew about 10X well in advance. We didn't know the name, I guess. We knew everything about it. We thought, and then the day they announced it, they're like, oh, it's only for dual screen devices. We're like, wait, what?
Right.
What are you talking about? This is never for dual screen devices. It was really strange. And we heard at that time, we heard right after that announcement, and I don't remember how, maybe you'll remember how, Panos Panay did not want to introduce, I think he said it publicly. I think he said it in an interview or something. He didn't want to introduce those devices at last year's event. He wanted to wait until they were ready. Mm-hmm. And since taking over Windows, you know, this stuff we kind of know on the back end. We knew it wasn't really for dual screen devices, you know, that maybe that was like a marketing idea to make it more exciting than it would have been otherwise. Mm. Who knows? We knew that.
I think the reason they ended up doing dual, like they decided to say, let's say it's dual screen devices, was because they wanted to have a smaller test pool for 10X. Yeah. Before throwing it out to the bigger single screen.
And to reassure people. We've said this before, that it's not a whole, even though it is, a wholesale rewrite of Windows. Like, this is just a special thing.
Except it's more than that. Well, but it's more than that, isn't it? So, I guess we'll open the can of worms. So,
Just pretend I didn't.
No,
would you like some pickled cactus with your worms?
Yeah, with some chip. Yeah. We got to really frame this because Windows 10X is not a one-off. It's not a little side project. It's important. And if this thing works, and there are two major components to this thing, right? There's the new user experience, which is simpler. And more like a Chromebook, more like you'd see on, you know, iPad OS or Android or whatever. And then there's the architectural stuff, which is super important, right? Microsoft for, I guess we're going to say decades now, has been trying to get past this legacy desktop Win32 environment and move forward to something that's more secure. It's more friendly for battery life, et cetera, et cetera. We've all the failures they've had are very well documented. They want this one to succeed. There's a chance. I think Mary Jo's, what you just said is correct. The way you get that out in the world is you put it on a limited device that's only going to be, you know, not going to sell in huge volumes. Mm-hmm. See how it goes, right? Prove it over time. And if it works, and it, you know, that's the dream, this becomes Windows. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yep. So all of that is true. But we also know from our sources, we've talked about this before, that the core of this thing that we've been talking about, which is literally like Core OS or Windows Core, or whatever you want to call it these days, is this further, not, you know, componentization, but modularization of the operating system. mm-hmm. not going well. There's been a lot of problems. And that's part of the delay for Windows 10X as well. Not just the dual screen stuff, but rather the architectural, you know, that stuff. And Panos Panay runs Windows now, runs Surface. So he's got a hand in both of the big parts of this release, 10X and the Surface Neo. Not going to happen, right? Not on the schedule they said before. So, yes, he presented this in a very positive way. We're listening to customers. Things have changed because of COVID. They're telling us now that what they need are traditional things. And we're going to – Windows 10X is so versatile, folks, so flexible. We're going to make it work on single-screen devices, even though we didn't plan that from the very beginning, which is nonsense, all of it. But because any platform, Windows anything, Android anything, Chrome OS, iPad OS, they're all designed for single-screen devices. It's easier to do that than it is to support dual-screen devices. Mm-hmm. So anyway, it was a long story, but you're right. To get back to your central thing, he does like to present things in a very positive light, and he did. And maybe that's part of the – not deception. I don't mean it like that at all.
No.
But there's like this there's these
salesmen.
Little...
They're all salesmen.
Yeah.
It's his job.
And I feel like also the reason I keep hearing, and I think he has even said this publicly, I believe, the reason he took on the Windows job was he felt like I want to bring more excitement back to Windows because it's kind of just lagging, right? Like it's just an afterthought by parts of the people at this company. And I think there's still a lot of cause for it to be exciting and ways to get the community excited. And he's got that personality, right? That's his style. He likes to get people revved up, right? And I think that's a big part of him being a more visible face for Windows and kind of bringing it out as more of a fun public thing again.
You could go to surface.com right now and look at the stuff they have, you know, and whatever you think of individual devices or whatever, but we can all complain about something. Yeah. What I see is a variety.
things.
Okay. But they have a very diverse and cohesive product family. There's lots of colors, lots of peripherals. There's a whole ecosystem going on here. It seems very vibrant. In fact, what this reminds me of is what Nokia did in the Windows Phone world. They brought a sense of like, I don't know what to call it, like completeness to it. Like this is a lot of stuff.
And fun too.
Yeah. And I see that in Surface, right? And we write about Windows. Windows is, I think, core to what we do. Applying this level of, excitement or whatever, you know, to Windows, that sounds good to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, again, we can pick and choose. Yeah. I mean, some of these things we may not like or whatever, but you have to. They built this thing up. I mean, Surface is how old is Surface? 8 years old now.
Eight, right? 2012 was Surface RT. Yep. How did I just know that off the top of my head?
You're amazing. You're just amazing. What do you store on your computer?
Oh, many things.
I'm going through this ridiculous quiz.
No, actually, that's the whole thing. Like, do you really want to be storing things on your computer or do you want to put them in the cloud?
Right. So some have said that X is targeted at Chromebook. I don't feel like that's the case. I feel like you tell me. I need you to tell me. Is this the future of Windows or is this like Windows 10S?
Remember before it was 10X and before there was any dual screen? That's what it was. It was the Chromebook competitor.
Right.
In fact, some people refer to it as an edge book.
Mm-hmm. Is that still what it is?
Well,
so, you know, I think it depends. It'll depend on the kinds of hardware they put it on. So when they say it's going to come to single screen first now, that means two in ones, right? It's like the Surface Pro and the other models of the Surface family. It also does mean clamshell laptops, right? So if you put... if you put 10X on a cheap, relatively cheap clamshell laptop, or even a cheaper two-in-one, you could say it's a Chromebook competitor.
Yeah, think about it this way. This is an unfortunate reality of timing, but a device like Surface Go 2, which is tiny, and does not have a full-screen keyboard. In fact, it has nothing even close to a full-size keyboard. It's astonishing how small it is.
days.
We're kind of at 10 inches or 10.5 inches, the Windows desktop with all of its dialog boxes and little notification pop-ups and everything, not really ideal for that kind of device. No. Mm-hmm. Surface 10X, I'm sorry, Windows 10X, interesting, you know, yep. runs the same apps, right?
Mm-hmm.
Full screen.
Here's the thing, though, that we should make this really clear because this comes up all the time on Twitter. 10X is only for new devices. It's never going to be put on anything that exists today, as far as I believe.
I would put that slightly differently. It will only be sold with devices. I don't think it's something you could install on existing devices.
Right.
So in other words, Microsoft.
Because I see people saying like, "Oh, I want to put this on the Surface Pro X."
Yeah.
But no.
So
it can probably be jailbroken.
They just changed everything. So I mean, anything could change. But I think the way remember that as of January, right before this pandemic hit and everything, the whole world went upside down. Lenovo and Dell. At least, and maybe others, but those are the two I remember, announced laptops that were going to be made available in versions with both 10X and Windows 10, whatever, for desktop.
Pro.
So, I get, you know, they were new at the time, whatever, but there's no reason that, they won't do it for Surface Go 2 probably, but let's say Surface Go 3 comes out, and we're talking about a year from now, you know, maybe Windows 10X is a good choice for that computer. Mm-hmm. And this is where the compromises start to make a little more sense. Windows 10X is a little more, let's say, touch friendly and like more of a tablet type OS. Mm-hmm. And the ability to run apps in a container that are legacy apps that maybe aren't going to run great, but it's still better than not having them at all is kind of ideally suited for Surface Go when you think about it. I mean, it's not an ideal machine for legacy desktop applications. You probably could bring up Photoshop Elements in this thing. I haven't tried it, but it would be, aside from performance or whatever, it'd be really hard to use because all of the UI bits would be so small. You know, like this thing is, the built-in Windows 10 apps would probably be fine. The UWP apps, a lot of web apps would probably be fine. Mm-hmm. I think that's the kind of device where Windows 10X will make more sense.
Me too. Agree. Yep.
So yeah. I'm still confused.
Okay.
How is it like S and not like S?
Yeah.
Is that what you're
S, so okay. An S was a flop.
Right. Yeah. So S locks you down.
Right? S is still, it's on Surface Go too, by the way.
It is. Right. The thing that got announced today.
Yeah. But by the way, again, that speaks to the limitations of the device. You know, in some ways they're trying to say, look, back off.
Yeah, don't
even try to run
your Photoshop on here. Don't put that heavy duty photo editor on here.
Yeah. So what's
right? So here's your biggest difference. Surface, Windows 10X will run Win32 apps in a container.
Right.
So anything built with Windows 10S, you only can run store apps. That's it. No Win32 at all.
Yeah, unless it comes on the system.
See, I was more interested in the under the hood. It's containerized.
Yeah. Stuff. Well, there's an overhead. There's an overhead to that, of course.
But I'm interested in that in terms of from a new way of looking at Windows.
Okay. So actually, if you don't mind, let's step back a year or two because
I don't mind.
Remember the conversation that we had about S mode or Windows 10S at the time. And I said the problem with this thing is it's a dead end. It's a one way dead end road, right? You're either going to do this thing or you're not. And what I said is what they should be doing is giving you some kind of a whitelist capability where you say, look, at the time, I really need iTunes, which was only a desktop app at the time, or I really need Chrome or whatever it was. I'm going to look, it's my computer. I want to run this one app. The rest of it can be in your stupid mode. But I need that exception. I'm the owner of the thing. I should be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about this container thing,
that's what that
this
does.
This is basically, it's a computer science solution to the issue I raised, which was you're limiting people. You're either 100% in or 100% out.
Yep.
You know, and I just want to be in sometimes. I'm happy to do S mode if I can run that one app that I want or that one driver thing I need or whatever it is. And I don't, you know, I never understood why they didn't do that. And maybe. Mm. You know, in a way, this solves that problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Like, they don't want you to take Windows 10X and only use it to run Win32 apps all the time. Like, that's, I'm sure that's not the way they are envisioning this being used, right? They're thinking, if there's a special app, I mean, some people will do that, right? But if they're hoping there'll be more of a case of most everything I need will work somehow without having to do this. But in cases it does, you'll have the container.
I doubt they would ever say it that way, but I mean, from Microsoft's marketing perspective, it's Windows. You should be able to run whatever you want, you know?
Right.
They're all apps, remember? Like, it doesn't matter. It's just an app. We don't care how you make it. We don't care where it came from, blah, blah, blah. It's all apps. Yeah. Right. Okay. But I mean, ideally, what sells a user on the more modern stuff is it looks better, it runs better, it kind of is better on that particular device. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm looking right now at what is unfortunately a relic, you know, the UWP Windows Store, whatever version of OneNote is apparently going away now. I like it better than the other version. You know,
is it going? I thought they were keeping both now.
I know.
Don't scare us now.
I'm projecting, but I mean, you don't. Yeah. Why would you have two versions of the same thing? Like,
well, like Skype.
It's weird. Yeah, I was just gonna say it wouldn't be the first time.
Skype UWP, Skype Desktop, they both exist.
Well, no, but those are both good examples of the same thing. They were saying sayonara to the desktop version.
I know.
They ran into some roadblock, and now they're like, actually, we're going to bring back the other thing.
It's back.
Well, Skype is actually that's a really interesting comparison because Skype for desktop looks exactly like the Skype UWP app now, so I don't care. Like, to me, that's not a big deal. I actually like the way that the OneNote Windows 10 version looks and works. Like, I like it. Mm-hmm. I prefer it. Mm-hmm. And I know there are people out there, power users, who are like, hold on a second. It doesn't do blah, 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 whatever 2016 does. I get it. But, you know, this kind of an app is better suited to this thing that we're talking about, these simpler environments from a user experience standpoint, and would work better on lower end hardware, you know, than a traditional desktop version of OneNote.
Yep.
So, nothing is, there's no perfect solution that fits everything.
Still confused about the positioning of Windows 10X.
Okay.
Is it a low end Windows?
It's a simpler Windows.
Windows.
That's a better way to put it. Actually, yes. Okay, so let's do this again. So at the May event a couple of years ago, when Terry Myerson introduced the first Surface laptop, so probably 3 years ago, maybe. Mary Jo, you seem to have dates on the top of your tongue.
Yeah, I just
like, it was on May 5th. Boom, boom. whatever that day was. Remember, we were in New York. Perfect day. And he said, I envision that people are going to see this thing and say, oh, you're making 10S and this, you know, for Chromebook competitors. And it's like, yeah, we'll be on low-end devices. But we know that there are people out there who are like traveling executives or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to buy a low-end computer, but they do want something that's simpler because they perceive that to be better and more efficient. And so that's why Surface Laptop came with S. Mm-hmm. It didn't work. You know, but 10X, I think, will have the same positioning because it really addresses the same needs and concerns, right? Yes, low-end hardware, sure, Chromebook competitor, yes. Mm-hmm. But also this need because, you know, Windows, I mean, I'm looking at the screen like you can see it. But, I mean, Windows has all these things on it, you know.
Yeah.
There's buttons and fly-ups and little blah, 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 and there's little chirps and all this stuff happens. There's a lot of stuff going on. It needs to be simplified for most people, not for all people.
Yep. And if you look at the mock-ups we've seen of the UI of 10X, it's a bunch of apps just pinned. And below it is a list of your recently accessed documents. It looks like Launcher, right? If you have the Launcher on your Android phone, it looks like that. So that UI to me is just way more sensible because what do you want to do when you have a device that you've got like on the road with you? You want to either open an app or you want to just get to a document that you just were using. That's it.
Right? So some guy in the comment section of my Surface Go 2 write-up was saying, you know, because my whole thing is like, look, if you have $400 to spend on a tablet, you're going to get an iPad, right? Mm-hmm. It's better in every single way you can imagine. More apps, more battery life, thinner, lighter, blah, 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 whatever. And he said, well, but some people just want Windows. Mm-hmm. And I don't think anyone thinks that way. Even when Windows was dominant, no one ever said, I want Windows. They said, I want this thing because it runs those apps that I use. it's where the apps are. You know, that's why Android and iOS are really about the apps. And in some ways, like when you, this legacy environment that we work in, for most people, again, I know there are people listening to this who think this is nuts and they love Windows, but it just kind of gets in the way. It's what you just said. I need to get to my documents that are important to me, and I need those documents to open in the apps that I know and trust and use. That's it.
Right. Right. Most people
little squirkly are things not, in right. the UI.
Most people aren't like, let me modify my taskbar and open the blah, blah, blah setting, right? Like there are people who want to do that. They're listening right now, but most quote normal people don't. Like somebody today showed me a picture of something and I'm like, what is that? And they're like, it's the taskbar menu. And I'm thinking, I've never opened the taskbar menu in my life. You know? I didn't even know there was one. Okay, now I know.
This is in many ways like, you know, there are people who are excited about, say, like Windows 10 on ARM or whatever. It's like Windows 10 on ARM kind of misses the point. I mean, I feel like part
that's
of
where
that
the apps
shift,
aren't.
Right.
Yeah.
But right, exactly. So it's like you get all the complexities of the legacy UI with none of the application
the benefits.
Sounds great. You know, like what a great idea.
I want that.
It's kind of the opposite. Yeah, I want that. Can you put it on a thin and light device? I like battery life. I can't run anything. Like it just doesn't. Look, there'll be a future where that platform won't matter because more and more of the apps that we're talking about are these apps, the modern apps that will run on ARM and on Intel and an AMD and whatever. That's fine. It doesn't matter. But, you know, there are foundational, technical underpinning type things like the container system in Windows 10X that are super important. But I feel like the user experience stuff is just as important. Like these things have to happen. Together. Like it's neat.
They do.
Yeah. We have this technical feat. We run Windows and ARM. Great. But that doesn't solve either of the two problems we just brought up.
But otherwise, 10X is supposed to be simpler. It's supposed to be more secure, just like 10S, right? It's supposed to be an operating system where updates happen in the background, where state of the operating system is separated from the actual OS itself, right? Application state is separate from the OS state. Like it's all these modern principles that they're putting in 10X, right?
Yeah, actually, let me give you a simple example of something that did change when they went to like the Windows 10 application model. I write this app, like this Notepad app, right? Mm-hmm. In desktop environments like WPF and WinForms, if you want to save the position and the size of the window as it was when the user closed the application, you have to do that yourself. It's not hard, but it's something you have to do to yourself. If you create a UWP application, it just does it automatically because that's part of that platform. You know, these are the kinds of improvements you get as you kind of move forward. So, I mean, you lose a lot too. Unfortunately, that's the problem with UWP. But you know, things improve in many quarters as well. And so, you know, Windows 10X is kind of the next step in that direction, I would say.
Is that any clearer?
No.
Really, right, we're trying.
Well, I misunderstood it. I was really hoping for a modern version of Windows. Like,
no, but
that's what it is.
imagine I was Panos Panay. Here's how I'd write it. Everything we do is terrible. Everything we've done is broken. Nothing we said is going to happen. It's going to happen on time.
Right.
So what we're going to do is everything you're using today, we're going to get rid of it. And we're going to replace it with this new thing called Windows 10X. It will be better eventually.
Is it another
really
Longhorn?
That.
Are we going down the Longhorn route here?
No, because Longhorn was, okay, maybe.
You know why it's not? There's not a reset happening, right? That's not why things are delayed. They're not like going back to the drawing board and saying, you know what? We promised you all this stuff and we can't pull it off. They still think they can pull this off.
Yeah, actually. We have comparisons that make sense. This is NT. It's NT because for a little while, it's going to be over here on the side. It's going to be this other thing. We're going to pretend it's important, but it's not everything.
Everything.
But eventually, if this thing works, it's going to take over
one
all
day.
Of Windows. But what we're not going to do is scare you now when you're on Windows 3.1 or 95 or 98 or whatever. And tell you everything you know and love is going away. We're not going to tell you that.
That's what I thought this was. So I'm glad you kind of confirmed that.
Yeah.
Because I have to say, the idea of sandboxing, it's sandboxed, right? It's the apps are containerized, is really the right way to do an operating system if you can do it without a lot of overhead. And yes. of course, it's going to be hard to get working, but it's going to be an ultimately more secure and more reliable. Just in the same way that when you went from Windows 95 to NT, suddenly your system didn't blue screen as much because the apps were running in user space and the system was running in a system space and they didn't intermingle.
Yeah, but remember the other unfortunate reality of Windows NT in the mid-1990s was, which was you got a new computer from Dell or whatever. It was running Windows 95 maybe or Windows 98, whatever it was. And it had X amount of RAM and whatever storage, and you put NT on it, and then it ran slow as a dog, and nothing worked.
Right.
So
we might be there too, though.
Yeah.
But that will be 10x.
Yeah.
It will be. There are incompatibility issues, and there are performance problems. Mm-hmm. But we're gonna, me and Mary Jo, but Microsoft is gonna work on this thing, and they're gonna try to fix it over time. And first, it will be on certain classes of devices where maybe it's. You know, maybe it doesn't make sense to run a lot of legacy desktop apps like Surface Go. Mm-hmm, but if they get that thing working properly, just like if they got NT working properly, which they did, it will become Windows.
And ultimately, NT was a better solution. I like your analogy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a good analogy, too. The other thing that's happening at the same time as they're continuing to try to fix 10X and get it working the way they want is they're going to take some features that we're going to just debut in 10X and they're going to bring them back to Windows 10. So we don't know what features those are, but I'm guessing like security things, like trust system for applications, those kinds of things, they're going to show up on Windows 10 probably before 10X comes out. That's my guess.
I think they should make the UX available on Windows 10 across the board as an option.
I do too.
Right? And on certain device types, that would be the default, maybe? Maybe we could consider it the new tablet experience or however you want to say it.
What would it take? What is? Does it need more power? Does it need fewer apps? What does it take to make?
Well, they've got to get the virtualization working so that there's a high level of compatibility.
Right.
I heard from some people that Office isn't working well on 10X. Well, that's a huge problem.
that's really not good.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Lotus not working, it's desirable, but Office is unacceptable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that kind of stuff has to be ironed out before they bring 10X to market because they don't want to have another WinRT, right? They don't want to have that happen again where they bring out an operating system and stuff doesn't work or doesn't work the way people expect it to work.
Even on a single screen device, one of the nice things about Windows 10X is that you don't look at it and say, oh, it's Windows. You know, so you don't have those expectations. I mean, the problem with Windows RT was it looked exactly like Windows 8.
That's
so
true.
Why can't I run all these apps? It's you've given me this thing that's obviously Windows and it doesn't run Windows apps.
Right.
You know, so if Windows 10X doesn't run Windows apps or some Windows apps or it runs them poorly, you know, I think the expectations... Just looking at it.
Yeah, just because of how it looks, right? Yeah.
I think so. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a really good point.
It's good. It's exciting.
Yeah. I know. Something new.
It was kind of funny that they used COVID as the excuse.
I know.
I didn't appreciate that.
I expect that from a lot of companies now, you know.
Oh, yeah. We had to close that service down because, well, COVID.
And it's like... I remember going to a store years ago, and I think I literally think this is crazy, but I think it was Bradley's in the Boston area. Remember Bradley's? And I think it was Bradley's. Anyway, but I'm at the register, and the woman's like, she's like, I'm sorry, you know, computers. And I'm like, I do know computers. What? Why are you blaming a computer? What are you talking about?
It ain't the computer.
Like everyone just accepts, you know, computers.
It's like, what about them? I like computers.
You know, they're just terrible.
But honestly, it's the beginning of so many people blaming COVID for so many things.
Yeah.
And it makes no sense to say, well, because of the virus, we're going to release this on single screen devices. I don't even, what is the connection?
I know. They're just saying because people didn't want to take risks on an unproven form factor like a dual screen because money is tight.
Customers came to them and said, Microsoft, there's a COVID thing going on. We got to stick with single screen. It's just too much.
You can't be doing this. What do you think really happened? What, maybe it worked better than they thought?
I guess 10X isn't ready.
It's not ready.
I don't think it would.
That's how I think about it.
So they're not really saying it's going to be on single screen devices. They're saying it's not going to be on the dual screen devices?
So
it's going to be on single first.
Single first. although the wording around the dual screen is a little vague, right? It's like, when the opportunity presents itself correctly, we and our partners will bring this to dual screens. That kind of makes me think, what if it never right. is the right opportunity?
Does it imply that there'll be a delay in Duo and Neo?
So Neo's definitely not this holiday, for sure. Yeah. And he never even mentions Neo.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Actually, Duo's Android, so it would be Neo. Right. Yeah.
We think the Android-based Duo is coming. We do.
So what they're really saying is, we're going to put off Neo because nobody's buying computers, or nobody wants to buy an experimental computer at this point. They want something that we can use for work from home. Sure. And since we're putting that off, okay, we really want to go forward with the 10X, so we're going to put that on a single screen.
It's not like Neo was coming out this month. You know, they're not responding to a changing market. I mean, they're just...
Who knows? It was going to come out in the Christmas, right?
Christmas. So I think the problem
is... Who knows what it'll be like then?
Windows 10X is not working. And if you want to eliminate some of the complexity just to get this thing so it can be out in the world, and plus... You know, don't you want it to be tested by Windows insiders? Don't you want, you know, just put it on computers. It just makes it easier.
I know. And so if you think about the schedule, so here's the part of Windows Panos doesn't control, the part that's in Azure. That's the Windows engineering team, right? And they're the ones who are on December, June cutoff dates. So if they were going to deliver 10X for this holiday, they'd have to be almost done with it right now.
Oh, yeah.
Because we're almost at the end of June, right?
So really this means everything's delayed.
Oh, yeah.
That's what the real upshot of this.
Well, and potentially not happening, depending on what it is, right? So, again, you know, if they could have known this was happening, they might have done Surface. They might have held off on Surface Go 2, and I don't know. Whatever, it doesn't matter. But I think the most likely scenario here is that we see I'm going to just go out and say it. I this is not based on any insider knowledge. I think Surface Go 3 will be the first 10X device from Microsoft.
And that would be next year.
I think that's this time next year. I think that's what makes sense.
Okay.
And then this fall, I think the first,
I'm going to make a later guess. I think the first 10X device from Microsoft will be maybe second half of next year.
Wow.
So maybe not the Surface Go 3, unless they hold the Surface Go 3.
They could hold it until then. Right? I mean,
They could. Yeah.
I stand by my statement. This really is Longhorn. we'll do it 2025, maybe. How about that?
Longhorn was a tough one because they just bit off too much.
And that was a complete rewrite of Windows, right?
Yeah.
And
what gets lost in that disaster is once they realized it wasn't going to work, they pulled together a brand new version of Windows in about 18 months, you know, which today doesn't sound crazy. But back in a world where 3 years was maybe the norm and 5 years was even closer, it wasn't optimized. It wasn't it wasn't any good at all in low end computers. And they eventually fixed it through service packs and then Windows 7. But, you know, they made lemonade. Mm-hmm. You got to do what you got to do.
Yeah. So I really don't feel like this is Longhorn. I do feel like they're having trouble pulling the idea of Windows Core OS and 10X over the goal line. But I don't think, like I said before, I don't think it's like they're going to go back and redo it. I think they're just going to keep trying to do this goal. Yeah. I mean, when did we first hear of Light and Santorini? Like 2 or 3 years ago, right?
Right. And when was the first time we heard about dual screen devices? The day they announced it.
Yeah.
So, And that's the other thing. You know, the reason it's more NT than Longhorn is because this doesn't prevent Windows from being iterated on normally, just like it always was. This is not all of Windows. It's this side thing, you know. They may intend it for it to be the future in the future, but today it's not supposed to come out this holiday season and replace Windows.
Mm-hmm.
So if it doesn't come out this holiday season, it doesn't, and, you know, it's fine.
Yeah.
Okay. This is so now I completely misunderstood it. I'm glad you explained it because this is completely different from what I was
to me. This is the most exciting thing that's happened to Windows.
Really?
Yes. It is since I don't even know. I don't even know what to compare it to. Longhorn was very exciting.
Since Windows Mint. Since 3.11 Windows for Workshops, if you
NT was huge. Longhorn was huge. Failed.
No, I agree. This could be very. This could be as important as that. It could be the rethinking of Windows it desperately needs.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
But it also sounds like it's not really coming along that well.
Well, look, I started the Supersite for Windows in 1998 because NT 5.0 at the time was going to replace Windows, and I was like, oh my god, this is really exciting.
Right.
They're literally going to swap out the platform. Like, it's incredible.
So, you know? Okay. So maybe next year, maybe late next year, maybe middle next year, we'll see. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But if there's one thing this post is not specific about is the when of anything.
And it could be COVID related because it could be because everybody's working from home. They can't work. They're not working fast or efficiently.
No, this was failing before this. We knew this. This is the other story. We didn't really mention this. Maybe we just mentioned it in passing. This is a confirmation of what we had already reported. we knew this thing was in trouble. So the blaming of COVID is very convenient, as is, you know, we're always listening to customers and they're telling us blah, 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 whatever. They announced this dual screen thing back in November, and Mary Jo and I were like, what? that day.
I know. We both got briefed and we were texting each other. I'm like, wait, they're saying they built it for dual screens?
sorry, we've known about this thing for a long time and we know that's not true. And, you know, it was just like, you know, it's market. Like you said, he's a marketer. That's what they do. Marketing it. Yeah. But it's like, that's not what this is. No. And now it literally isn't again. So, you know, whatever.
Right.
You know, thank God it's so flexible. They can make that change, I guess.
They really are nimble, aren't they?
You know what we did is we unscrewed that middle bar between the two screens and we just pulled it off and it just works.
We know we told you guys that having two screens side by side with a gutter was going to make you more productive, but you know what? You're going to be productive enough without it.
What
before I had the Surface Neo, I didn't even know how to paint, but now I paint masterpieces every day. It's unlocked that part of my brain.
What if you could have one screen where two were? What if the bezel just magically disappeared?
Yeah, exactly.
That's the world we envision for the new Windows 10X.
You've got to record this for them. They need this.
Well, I'm still looking forward to 10X. I hope that it's not, I hope they can get it out the door.
I think they can.
What do you think the problems are? Do you hear anything about
it? It's performance and compatibility.
Yeah, but you'd expect
virtualization.
That. When you're
virtualization.
Doing, when you're doing something like this.
Yeah,
it's going to be hard to get everything to work. I mean, Wine's been around for decades, practically.
Yeah.
It's hard to get this to work. The virtual build's coming up in a month.
We're going to get to that, but I don't think they're going to do too much on future stuff. Well, that's what they said. I mean, I guess we'll see. But
I mean, they said no big product announcements, but they still could explain some of the 10X container technology.
Let's take a break, and we'll talk about that when we come back. Paul and Mary Jo and the Windows that might have been.
And maybe still will be.
And maybe still will be. The once and future Windows.
Too positive.
Yes.
Our show today, my friends, is brought to you by a little tiny little box that I have over here. I don't know if you can see it. I guess you kind of can. That right there, that little black box, that thing is a honeypot, man. That is my canary. And this box, man, it looks to hackers, it looks like not something vulnerable, but something valuable, something cool. With everything going on in the world, Thinkst, the makers of the canary, want you to know they're here for you. The bad guys, I hate bad guys so much because they take advantage of disasters. They call disasters like this a disaster-tunity. I can't claim credit for having made that word up, but it is kind of funny. It's an opportunity, and data breaches are already on the rise. There are lots of spear phishing attacks, advanced persistent threats, hackers wandering through your systems, because you got a lot of people out there working from home. Suddenly your network is porous. You got to get a canary. Canary is designed to be installed, configured, and most likely forgotten. How many products do you know of where they say you're going to forget about it? It really is. It just sits there. It's connected to the network. But I got to tell you, what I can do with this canary is amazing. I can make it be anything. I can make it be, well, right now it's a NAS, okay? But I could, it's on, you know, it's there's the MAC address, which is, by the way, the Synology MAC address. I can open, I can see what the incidents are. By the way, I love the way they roll up alerts, so you only get actionable alerts. You don't get overwhelmed. It could be email or text message. It could be on your console. You can use Slack, webhooks, syslog. They have an API, so you can write it into your own software. Here's the configuration. I turn on FTP. I turn on a web server, and, you're going to love this, hackers. SSH and Windows file sharing. Why not? Why not? Now, I can do all sorts of things with this. I mean, that's right now a Synology NAS, but I can configure it differently anytime I want. Let's say I want to make it a Windows. What do I want it to be? What's my personality? I could turn it on as a Christmas tree. All the services are on. I could say what version of it's right now. It's running Linux because that's what the Synology runs. But it could run Windows 8, 9. Well, there's no Windows 9. It can't do that. 7, 8, or 10. They can run Windows Server. Cisco. It could be a Cisco VoIP phone. My canary could be a Cisco VoIP phone right now. A Dell Power Connect switch. A Rockwell Automation PLC. It could be a SCADA device from Siemens. It could be, I'm going to turn it into an IBM mainframe. You could change the MAC address so it matches whatever it is it's supposed to be. So it's not like it's obvious when the hacker looks at it. The MAC suffix, you can make it anything you want. It makes it easy for you to figure out what it is. The great thing is you can sprinkle these all over your network. It looks to a hacker like what I've set it up to be. But in fact, it isn't. As soon as a hacker touches it, I get an alert, an actionable alert. And these alerts should be dead simple, right? They're easy to work with, conforms to your needs. Thanks, Canary's made that possible. You won't be inundated with alerts. You'll get one when it matters. And two things all companies should know when it comes to data breaches. Two things. Hackers will take the path of least resistance. Who's that? That's your staff. Easiest way to get in. Phishing, spear phishing attacks, social engineering. There's all sorts of ways. And here's the worst. Here's the worst. The second piece. The worst. On average, it takes a company 191 days to realize there's been a data breach. That's almost 6.5 months. That's crazy. And in some cases, it's longer. How long did it take Sony to figure out the bad guys were wandering their network? How long did it take Marriott? Years. You don't want to be that company. You want to be appraised of whatever's going on in your network. I really love having canaries on our network. You can also make canary tokens, which are files generated by the canary. They can look like a PDF, a Word document, whatever you want. I have a spreadsheet called, I think I called it payroll information. I thought that might be attractive. And anytime somebody tries to open it, boom, I get a notification. You also get all the information. If they try to log into my NAS, I will get the password that they're using. I'll get the login they're using. It tells me something about what they know about my network. These are the best devices. The company behind Canary, Thinxt, has been in the security game for almost 2 decades. They've trained companies, militaries. They've trained governments how to break into networks. And they know, and that's why they built the Canary. Thinxt's Canaries are deployed all over the world. 7 continents. All 7 continents. They're the best tool against data breaches, hacker attacks, any kind of advanced persistent threat. Visit canary.tools/twit. There's a, you know, the pricing depends on how many canaries you get. I'll give you an example. 5 canaries, enough to cover a decent sized company. I mean, there's some companies with a handful. There's some companies with dozens. But let's say 5. You get your own hosted console. You get upgrades. You get support. You get maintenance. If one of them dies at any time, they just send you another one. $7,500 a year. And if you use our offer code, TWIT, in the How Did You Hear About Us box, you get 10% off that price forever, for life, of any price, you know, however many you get. And we know you're going to love the Thinxt Canary, but They are really good. If for any reason you don't like it, you can return your Canary. They have a 2-month money back guarantee for a full refund. So there's no reason not to try this. Now is the time when you've got people, your employees out there working from home. You don't know who's on your network. You really need this. I'm so glad we have it. Canary.tools/twit. 10% off for the life of your Canaries when you use the offer code TWIT, T-W-I-T. This is security done right. Every single network should have these little honeypots. Canary. Thinkst Canaries. Canary.tools/twit.
Sorry about that.
What? Coughing, hacking, hewing?
Laughing.
Laughing? No. That was completely appropriate. Disaster tunity. That's what we call it. All right. On we go with the show. Where do we stop? No one knows.
Talk about when the plain old Windows 10.
Oh, see, I don't want the plain old Windows 10 anymore.
Who cares?
What's the latest?
Yeah. So we said in Panos's post, he didn't tell us when 2004 is coming, other than he said, it's going to be in May. Yeah, we know. We know it's going to be in May. But I heard right after the show ended last week that the new schedule, after they patched the 0 day, has them delivering 2004 to developers next week on Patch Tuesday, on May 12th, and then possibly starting to roll it out broader to the mainstream starting May 28th. So this is pushed back like a week or two from the original plan that we talked about on the show recently. But it is coming this month, finally. Finally.
Yep.
So that's good. It's happening.
Yeah.
It's happening.
I don't, you know, maybe it's me. I get an impending sense of dread when I know that's what's happening.
Oh, because you think things might break and stuff.
Yeah. They might.
I know. They might.
It's like,
it's happened.
Can we leave it alone just for a little
bit? Well, the good part is they've tested this one so much because they finished it late last year, basically.
So you think this will be the best Windows ever?
I don't know if I want my name attached to that message.
I would say if the latest one isn't the best version ever, they're doing something horribly wrong.
Right. Well, but you
but
know.
I think they've tested this one more than any of the recent feature updates, just because they've been patching it with cumulative updates over and over and over.
So the slogan should be something like Windows 10 2004. It's probably not going to break your system.
Right. You might have luck with this one.
This one's probably going to work.
I feel like sucks less is a little more concise, but yeah, probably something like that.
No, but we really tested it this time. We really tested it this time.
Boy,
yeah. Trust us.
Yeah. But you think that's true, right? You feel we shouldn't see any howls of pain from this.
I mean, do feel like
it's inevitable. When you have, 1.5 billion installed users, you know, 1/1000th of 1%, you're going to hear lots of howling.
You are.
And nothing is so good that you don't, because it's a very heterogeneous environment. You've got all kinds of machines running all kinds of flaky stuff. So you can't ever be perfect. But this will be closest to perfect.
You know, software's ones and zeros. I feel like it should be perfect.
It should be perfect.
It is. You're right. It never is perfect.
Yeah.
But we have high hopes for this one.
Yeah. I do.
Good. Okay.
Next week we'll be standing in front of a house fire telling people there's nothing to see here.
So far. Again, developers next week, Patch Tuesday.
That's what I think. I think OEM's really good about it this week.
Okay.
20H2 is going to be awesome because, you know.
Right.
Because.
A minor update.
It's just a minor cumulative update to the existing 2004. So,
half better.
Anything.
Six months of additional testing.
It's going to be great.
Wow. Nice.
Should be very good. Should be very solid.
Yeah. Probably won't break your system this time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about your system.
Actually, to be completely fair, I have never had a Windows update break any of my systems.
Yeah.
But you hear about it, and it's just because it's hard when you have that many systems out there not to have some people have problems.
Yeah.
Ask Kindle owners how they feel about that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's the schedule. Anything else you want to add to that?
This is a small note about the Your Phone thing is kind of interesting.
What's going on with Your Phone?
Your Phone has developed into an incredible utility if you have an Android phone, where it does all kinds of different things, obviously text messaging and photos and stuff. And they've expanded that. You can see your phone on the screen and interact with it. They're adding features to it all the time. And so one thing that's in preview now, not just for Insider preview builds, I think it's available to everybody, is if you have audio players on your phone, which of course you do, you can control them from your phone on Windows. And you can see what's playing, which app it is, skip around, control playback, et cetera, et cetera. So that's kind of cool.
Do you have feature?
No, I don't.
I don't either. I was looking today to see if I have it, but I don't think I have it yet.
Nope, I do not.
I have calls working, though, so I can, like, see calls coming in, answer them, make calls for my PC. Yeah, yeah. Which is kind of handy.
I'd like to know why there has been no movement on the iPhone side of this. Everybody knows, you know, Apple locks down the system.
I'm like, Apple.
But but there are third-party apps that do this stuff. I mean, some of them require the phone to be plugged. Well, all of them, you know, for full functionality, has to be plugged into the PC, et cetera, et cetera. But like they've really just completely ignored the iPhone. Mm. It seems like some of this would be possible.
Especially because a lot of people at Microsoft use iPhones, right?
Yeah, yep. But if you do have, if you use Windows and an Android phone, you're hurting yourself by not at least looking at this. It's pretty incredible.
It is. It's good. It's working. Yeah. I'd say working for me like 95% of the time.
Yeah, except for this new music thing, which doesn't work at all.
I don't have that. But yeah, everything else, like notifications working, I see all my messages. I can answer messages from my PC. Like right now, my sisters are both texting me a lot. I can see all the messages coming up.
I don't have, like, phone mirroring doesn't work on my Pixel, but when I had the Samsung phone, it worked there. Mm-hmm. And this audio player feature is not Samsung specific, if you're wondering. It's any Android phone, basically. It works with Spotify, Pandora, Amazon, Google Play Music, YouTube Music, and a few others, Google Podcast too. So anyway, it's coming. Yeah. It's in preview. So it's gradually rolling out is what they say. That may explain why we're not seeing it yet. Also because they hate us.
They're like, those two, make sure they get it last.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you want to... say Stephen Sanofsky three times?
No, Leo.
He will appear.
Don't do that.
He will appear.
Let's just say briefly, he's writing a book. Actually, those in the know will know this is his second book. First one was a real barn burner.
I know, they quoted it. I was like, oh my God.
It's tough.
It's real corporate speak.
But yeah, it's a lot about management and, you know, all those things he was really good at. He is specifically going to write, though, about the history of his time running Office and Windows, which is interesting. I mean, I can't not read it, you know. I know he's going to rewrite history, which bothers me.
His tweet storms have been pretty compelling, pretty interesting. I don't necessarily agree with them, but they're always provocative. Do you think this will be as well written? They're always long. Will this be?
Really? You're telling me he feels constrained by one tweet? That's
no, never, never.
I don't pay attention to him on Twitter, so I don't know. But I don't know.
He's been, you know, weighing in on Apple and other stuff. I mean, that's what's interesting to me. He's definitely stepping out of the Microsoft role and talking about other companies. And
why would anyone care what he thinks about anything?
In this excerpt that he published, he's talking about Microsoft's response to the love bug.
Mm-hmm. I love you.
I love you. It's the 20-year anniversary of I Love You.
All right, you want to go there? Let's do it. Screw it. I'm going to do this.
Do it, Paul. Mary Jo.
Let's look at that excerpt.
Okay.
And let's see what this is like. I tweeted about this. Let me see if I can. Let me find this exact quote. Yeah, this is what he learned. So when they released Office 2000, they had gotten a bunch of feedback from their customers about what they wanted in Office 2000. And what they found was that they had tilted, he says, too far to the enterprise side. product was incredibly stable, easier to use than ever, but it lacked anything interesting to grab the attention of customers. And this is what he learned from that, Leo. Listening too closely to customers wasn't always the best approach. What?
Huh?
So
that's pretty Apple, you know, right? Steve Jobs, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Steve always pretended they didn't listen to customers.
Yeah. You know what? You can define the future if you're some kind of visionary, but you know what? That's really rare. And, you know, honestly, you got to get feedback from customers and find out what they want. And then you have to take a leadership position and decide which of those things to implement and which not to implement. The problem with Office 2000 wasn't that they listened too closely to customers. They listened to the wrong customers, or they implemented the wrong features.
Yeah, or they didn't listen.
That's right
well
at
enough.
The beginning of this excerpt. So if your brain doesn't shut off after reading that, I mean, have fun with the remaining 11,000 words. But I that's this guy in a nutshell. And that terribleness of his era, especially running Windows, although he did that at Office too, Microsoft reversed it as soon as he was gone. That's why the Windows Insider program exists.
Right.
So that Windows would be developed transparently with the full understanding of its customers, what it was doing and what it was, you know, answering and what it was replying to. It was a complete refutation of his whole approach. So, yeah, I'm going to read the book, but, you know, it's like, you know, it's like getting an uncomfortable exam. I know I have to do it. I'm going to do it. I don't have to like it. I don't know.
Just, I'm glad
Mary Jo,
you're
do you
read
share
it.
Paul's antipathy for Mr. Sinofsky?
You know,
it's
how far to go without going life. Jumping off a cliff here.
we have similar experiences.
I feel like when he ran Office and when he ran Windows at Microsoft, he wouldn't talk to the press. And now I feel like he's looking for press for his book. Yeah. So I feel like Turnabout's fair play, my friend.
Oh, interesting. Oh.
Yeah, let me put it. And Mary Jo might have experienced this. When he was gone, I got a call from the PR team at Windows to apologize for the way they had treated me and telling me that this would never happen again.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
there wasn't a lot of love lost when he
no,
just
on departed. Either side. He didn't like working with us. And well, actually, he liked working with Paul at some points.
Yeah.
He never liked working.
I experienced both sides. I experienced the late night email things where he wouldn't stop emailing back. And I would reply with like a single sentence to try to put an end to it. And then he would write 8 paragraphs.
Oh, geez.
And I remember thinking, you know, I don't even work for this guy. Right. Imagine if you were at Microsoft,
then you'd have to respond
because you would have to deal with it.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, he was manic in his relationship with me. It was either hyper positive and exciting or he wanted nothing to do with me.
What's he doing now? Is he working anywhere? Or is he just on the beach writing books?
He does Andreessen Horowitz stuff, doesn't he?
Oh, he's an investor. He's a VC.
Yeah.
I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also I try to read books about our industry and business as seldom as possible because I feel like all I do all day is read this kind of stuff.
Oh, I know.
And I don't want
to
read it.
If I have to boil the ocean one more time, I'm just going to.
See, I read all this stuff, and I will say in the history of Microsoft, obviously there were periods of time where there were a bunch of Microsoft books. And the two big periods, the foundational years – and then the antitrust stuff. Those were explosions in content about Microsoft. Since the Microsoft antitrust stuff, most of the industry books have been about mobile companies, you know, Google, Apple. I just read a terrible book about Samsung. And by terrible, I mean terribly written. But written by kind of an insider who obviously had great sources and blah, 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 whatever. You know, Samsung is whatever they are. But yeah, there hasn't been a lot of good Microsoft stuff.
It's funny. Like, I'm thinking I haven't read an industry book in years.
Yeah,
I mean, Showstoppers was great, you know?
Yeah.
Pascal Zachary's a great book. Stephen Levy, of course, has written quite a few. But even with Stephen's book, I've got on my bookshelf, I've got his new Facebook book. Who cares? I just can't. Yeah, it's like
I don't want to read it.
Sure,
I don't.
Steven's a great writer, great insights. I bet it's a wonderful book, but I don't want to read about Facebook.
I've read a bunch about Google, a bunch about Apple.
The last good industry book I read was The Everything Store, Brad Stone's book about Amazon. That was pretty interesting.
But
maybe we're just burned out. Maybe there's a young generation of up and coming technology journalists who are just excited about reading every book in the industry. And
I don't think there are, Leo. But I think
maybe
I don't think they read. I think if there's a YouTube video, they might watch it.
Well, I think if the company is enduring and has great influence over the world, that can be very interesting, right? If it's a fly by night thing, like I wouldn't read a book about MySpace would be of zero interest. I read books about Napster when it happened.
Would you read a book about Uber or Airbnb? No. It's a bunch of bros.
Yeah.
I know. I feel like I should care more than I do, but I feel like I don't.
Console Wars, that was pretty good, but that's about the old days.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
No, even writing my own book, I hated it. Because I didn't even want to, when I finished it, I'm like, I don't even want to read my own book.
Let's
like,
put that
I don't.
On the cover. I hated it. Mary Jo Foley.
Mary Jo Foley, author.
Microsoft 2.0.
I hated my book, The End.
It's hard because, why is it hard? The industry itself isn't that interesting, for one thing, right?
I think it depends, interesting, but I don't know. I guess if you like business books.
No, it's not just. It's not. I don't want to learn management lessons, right?
I read
this stuff. I'm when I read a Microsoft book in particular, an Apple book or whatever, I'm interested in the products.
Stories.
For example, I've listened and re-listened to the Steve Jobs biography many times.
Yeah.
I skip
you
over all the stuff from his childhood about when he went to India.
Yeah, I don't care about that. I want to hear about this.
I don't care about any of that stuff. I care about how they made the iPhone, the iPad, the whatever, the iMac. Like that stuff is. I'm interested in products.
But you could also make the case that that was a fascinating process because that was a genius doing something amazing.
And No, it's
most
like
of the time, it's widgets.
Playing a perfect game. You know, it's just everything went great. But, you know, the early history of the PC industry is interesting. So there are a lot of good books about that period because it was that's history.
Right.
You know, it's literal history. Listen, no one wants to read a history of the office organization at Microsoft from 1998 to 2003, whatever. Except that's going to be part of Stephen Stavsky's book, so I'm going to read it. And, I'm probably going to be a basket case when it's over.
Oh, my God.
I'm glad you're taking one for the team.
You should read it aloud to Stephanie to help her get to sleep every night.
Oh, gosh.
Chapter 4, I come to the Windows team.
She would just kill me in my sleep. That would
justifiably so.
Who would convict her?
No one. Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. There's so few books by anyone in our business that I care enough to spend my time reading. I know it's a terrible admission, but it's true.
No, I feel the same way. And hadn't even thought about that because I used to eat them up. You know, back to the Tracy Kidder's Soul of the New Machine.
I actually do read a lot of this. I still read a lot of them.
Really?
You do. I know.
The Rob Canyon thing, the story of Compact, that story is very interesting. I'd have to go back and look through my list and maybe I find the 10 most recent. But like I said, the most recent one I read was Samsung and mostly it was not that interesting. It was framed around the Note, what was it, the Note 7 that exploded and how all that stuff happened.
That would be interesting.
I was really interested to see just today, speaking of that, that the secret leader of Samsung, who's the family member that's run Samsung, just said today, we're not going to do this succession thing anymore.
No more dynasty.
That was a big part of the story of why Samsung was so screwed up.
Yeah.
So that's still evolving. It's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of, I go by a lot of topics like the Facebook books or like you said, Uber, stuff like that. I would never, it's no way.
I tried to start Nick Bilton's book about Twitter and Nick's a great writer.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
who cares?
It's about Twitter.
Ugh.
I mean, seriously, who cares?
There's so, you know, there's so many books of fiction I want to read. And you got to prioritize your time,
real problem,
right?
Yeah. There's so many other books I'd rather read. There's a, we talked about the new book about Winston Churchill. Eric Larson's new book.
Yes. That's right.
Splendid in the Vile.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I'd much rather read those.
I've been reading a lot of biographies lately, actually. I'm looking through my list.
I wonder if, I mean,
The Splendid in the Vile.
Splendid in the Vile. Yeah, I don't even read Trump books anymore. I read The Fire and Fury, and after that it was like, oh, God, I can't read anymore. Never. And even though I think this will make a wonderful chapter, there'll be a lot of movies and books in about 20 years when we can look back on this. And I suspect there'll be a lot of COVID-19 stuff.
Mm-hmm. There will.
Maybe that's because we're in the middle of it now. We don't want to, we really want to read fiction.
History of Unix, written by Brian Kernighan.
Oh, I've never read that. Was that good?
Yeah, it was okay, but the Kindle version was like fixed type, so it was really hard to read.
Hard to read. Oh, see, I would like to read that. That would be interesting.
Yeah. What else?
I used to read all of those books. I used to love those. Like I said, Showstoppers was such a great book.
It was. That was just because it read like fiction.
Yeah,
it did.
It's an origin story. You know, like those are always the most interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was about Windows NT.
I read a lot of just technical books, like WPF books lately.
Or
I know, broken inside. Brad Smith.
He plays Call of Duty and reads technical books.
He's a weirdo. He's just a weirdo.
I'm sorry, ladies. I'm taken, but I bought a book about COM programming within the past 6 months.
I buy so many books on programming. It's
World War 3.0 by Ken Auletta.
That's a good book. That's World War 3.0. I like that.
It's not new, but
he's a great writer, though. I love Ken Auletta.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
The Old New Thing by Raymond Chen. I'm sorry, Mary Jo.
I just said I couldn't read the trial books because I was covering the trial, and I'm just I can't stomach it anymore.
I read a Robert X. Cringely book about IBM recently, which was terrible, which is actually really not very good.
Is he even the original? There's many Cringelys, aren't there?
I don't think it's the original anymore.
It's some other Cringely. It's too confusing.
The guy who worked on the iPhone team. That's pretty good.
I tried to read that. We interviewed him.
Yeah. I mean, the story's been told.
Yeah. I think the Steve Jobs era was kind of interesting just because he was such a character.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, that's most of it for the past year. But
there's this great book, The Delphi 3 Super Bible. Have you read it?
Yep. I've been working on the audiobook version for 20 years, Leo.
I reread that every year. It's great.
Slow down.
Actually, I do read a lot of programming books. It's really sad. I can't not even. Somebody will say, "Oh, if you don't have this in your library, I have like a great."
My most recent purchase is literally a Xamarin Forms book. So, yeah, that's
nice.
I love reading cookbooks.
Yeah,
cooking, but I like reading them and studying them.
If I read cookbooks, I feel bad.
Cooking is programming.
It is. It's exactly the same.
That's true.
By the way,
equations, chemistry.
It's chemistry. Yeah. I've been learning about the miracles of baking soda.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Oh boy! After reading about salt, I wasn't sure what to do next.
There's a new book about caffeine. Jonathan Collins.
There is a book about salt also.
Yeah, there's classic salt. That's good.
That's why I mentioned
Kuryansky's book. Yeah, that's great.
My wife is reading the caffeine book actually.
Yeah, Michael Pollan's good, and I think caffeine's very interesting. I only have the excerpt from the Audible originals, but it's pretty interesting. And by the way, I'm having my first cup of coffee in about a month, so if I get a little weird.
Wow.
Yeah. I've been drinking chai tea because I was reading a book about India.
Yeah.
Shantaram, which I love. Great book.
Chai is delicious.
And he's having masala chai all the time, right? So I just, I found a really good vendor from India. Vandam chai, and I get that every month. I get more delivered, and I don't
chai as a service.
Chai as a service. Kez. Our show today brought to you by Barracuda. There's a name. Boy, anybody who's in the security field knows Barracuda. We were talking with Steve Gibson yesterday on Security Now. He said you'd go in these big network operation centers like level three. And there you see it, Barracuda box after Barracuda box just lining up in the racks. Barracuda is here to protect you today in this era of work from home. Because suddenly you've got dozens, hundreds, maybe even thousands of employees working out of their house, no longer safe in the enterprise. Each one of them's getting tons of emails every day. And since 91% of all cyber attacks start with an email, spear phishing, ransomware, account takeover, conversation hijacking, how many employees, how many emails a day? And all it takes is one wrong click on the wrong email. And man, it could cost you money, it costs you customers, it costs your reputation. Barracuda researchers, and there's a great blog post which I highly recommend on the Barracuda website, have seen a steady increase in the number of coronavirus-related spear phishing attacks since January. You know, they pretend to come from the WHO, the World Health Organization, or, you know, or here's a message from the boss about how we want you to, you know, protect yourself, or what, you know, they'll do whatever it takes to get your disaster-tunity, right, to get your attention. They have observed a spike of 667% in COVID-related spear phishing attacks since the end of February. You need Barracuda Total Email Protection. It'll give you all the protection you need, all in one email, security, backupping, and archiving. That's an AI-based protection because these attacks change constantly, so you can't just say have rules. You've got to be smart about it. They're watching for spear phishing, account takeover, business email compromise. There's an automated incident response that gives you options to quickly and efficiently address attacks. Because honestly, the faster you act, the better it is. You know, if you can act quickly enough, you can, you know, limit the damage. They even do security awareness training remotely so you can educate your workforce. That way employees can be, as they are, really the first line of defense against attacks. I don't know. Just go through your inbox. You'll see a few of these spear phishing attacks. Every, you know, it's terrible. Right now, there are attacks coming out in all sorts of clever, manipulative, scary ways. They'll use domain spoofing. They'll promise information relating to the virus, all to get that user to click a link or visit a site. Ensure the safety and security of your business. Use Barracuda. In fact, they're offering right now, first of all, I would go to the website, read the blog, get the information. But they also have a really nice free offer right now. To uncover the threats hiding in your inbox, you can get a free, right now, secure email threat scan of your Office 365 account. No risk. Barracuda.com/windows. At least find out what's in there. You will be amazed. You will be shocked. You'll probably be dismayed. But at least it's good. Don't hide your head in the sand. You got to know this. Barracuda.com/windows. Barracuda. Barracuda.com/windows. Barracuda, your journey secured. It's a nice offer from Barracuda. I thank them. And I thank you for supporting us by making sure you use that custom domain, Barracuda.com/windows. All right. They didn't do an event. They sent out a press release, but here it is, the Surface Spring Reveal.
A lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But you know one thing? I went through the whole thing. Mm-hmm. One thing missing? You know what it is.
Yep. No, what?
What?
Thunderbolt 3.
Oh. Yeah.
Here I am.
They say it's not secure.
Yeah, BS.
Stop pretending that was ever going to happen. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any of these features important to you? LTE?
Which of these features are important?
Choice of colors, on-screen writing, USB-A ports, USB-C ports, headphone jack. Where's the box for Thunderbolt 3? I don't...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Sorry,
Charlie. Really, is that the reason? It's not because it's supported by the Intel chipsets they use. I don't get it.
Nobody gets it.
You know how COVID was given as the reason for the 10X delay? Yeah. Lack of security is the Thunderbolt reason.
It is the case that it's direct memory access, but Apple seems to have figured it out. They protect you against plugging in a device with DMA.
I will say, so here's the deal. Obviously, the beauty of a USB port is you plug something and it just works, right? And it's consistent. USB-C works like that on computers. There is some inconsistencies with USB on phones. I mean, my wife wanted to use a USB-C to headphone dongle, and I had to go through four.
Oh, yeah, they don't all work. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a weird problem. That kind of compatibility issue does exist with Thunderbolt 3 on PCs. So I've tried a couple of different docks. And you know, you have mixed results. It should just work. It should just work every time. It should work consistently.
I gotta say, it works on a Mac. It works on Linux.
You're right. I don't know Dell's about Linux, but Mac is. Yeah, I know. So,
but do they think customers don't care that they don't really, because it is expensive to get Thunderbolt 3 devices compared to USB.
I'm going to do something which my critics think I do all the time and just provide what I believe is the Microsoft answer to this question, and I think it's correct. I think they just want people to have a good experience, and they just feel that it's too dicey with Thunderbolt 3 to be able to offer that, and they just aren't going to do it for now. So,
and also, people aren't really demanding the speed. If they have USB 3.1 on a Type-C connector, that's
right.
I have a number of Thunderbolt docks and drives.
Yeah.
And I love Thunderbolt 3 drives.
Yep.
To me, honestly, it's the primary reason I wouldn't even consider a Surface device.
Yeah.
Really?
No, that's fair. And the vast majority of their products are basically laptops or portable computers. And in that case, a USB-C port pretty much does it, because you can connect to a dock that can go to multiple devices. You can connect to a display. Works fine. I mean, I agree with you, but I'm trying to understand, because they've been very evasive about it. But I really think it's a user experience issue. And I just think they... people forget they're as a PC. I know they make the platform.
You're not getting DisplayPort. You can't, for instance, the new Mac 13-inch MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
You can connect to their giant XDR display, their 6K display, over Thunderbolt 3. You couldn't do that over USB.
Right. Well, someday soon USB 4 will happen, and maybe that's the time.
What they're waiting for.
Really,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
I agree with you. I'm really just trying to understand it myself. I'm not defending it. I've criticized them as everyone knows. I mean, for years about this.
All right.
Whenever Apple first embraced USB-C, no, Thunderbolt 3, and whatever that first MacBook Pro that had the 4, I was like, guys, this is it. This is the future.
Right.
This is
right.
And whatever year that was, 2016, maybe 2015, I don't remember, but it seemed like the whole industry has gone this way. You can't buy a Lenovo. A Dell, an HP flagship device without Thunderbolt.
They all do.
I know.
All right. So I'm going to drop that. Got it out of the way. There's lots. I mean, there's lots of nice new stuff. Let's talk about what.
Yeah. How do you want to handle this, Mary Jo?
I don't know. So I ended up, the way I covered this was I wrote one blog post because I felt like there was a lot of stuff, but we knew about almost all of it in advance because of all the leaks and the rumors. And everything we knew was pretty much right.
There's
not 100%, but
there
weren't. The only surprise was a USB-C travel hub.
Right.
That was the only thing nobody knew, right?
The other thing that makes this a little less interesting is that for whatever reason, the two PCs are literally identical to their predecessors physically.
Right. Very incremental upgrades. I mean, they have new processors, right? They have bigger, the Surface Book 3 has a bigger battery. So if you already like those form factors and those kind of products, you'll be okay with the new ones. But there's nothing in either of them that you're like, okay, and this is amazing that they did this, right?
I would be shocked. I'd be surprised if anyone with a Surface Book 2 felt compelled to upgrade to Surface Book 3. But, that's often not who those upgrades are for anyway, right? I mean, Apple doesn't expect people who bought last year's iPhone to buy the new one. It's 2-3 years ago, whatever. Yeah. So if you never owned a Surface Book, or if you're still stuck on Surface Book 1, which frankly was kind of unreliable, this might be a good upgrade.
Surface Go 2 is the most interesting, just because I had the 1 and it was really underpowered. This one's a little bigger, a little more powerful. They have an M3.
A little bigger screen.
Yeah, a little 10.5-inch screen.
You can get an M3 processor. 8 gigs of RAM and SSD on the storage is not new to this year, but you get all those those things together.
The bezels still look huge, though.
God, the bezels still look huge. Yeah. Yep. They do on Surface Book 2, Surface Book 3 as well. Yeah, there are other little improvements that don't get a lot of press. You know, the microphones are better. The speakers are actually pretty good.
Does this kid have tattoos?
What?
Look at that.
Oh, she probably drew it around with a marker.
Okay,
or something.
But interesting choice. I don't know.
I mean, to me, Surface Go, you know, is kind of a kid's computer. I don't know how else to say it.
Maybe, yeah.
K through 8 is the target.
It is comically small. It's comically small.
So it's for kids with tattoos, basically.
Well, I think, you know, the thing you don't get when you see pictures of this thing and you see like the video, if it's out of context. It's not clear how tiny this is.
That's why they show it with little people.
You need to see it next to a real computer.
Yeah.
Actually, I can provide that demonstration. Let's see.
Oh, yeah, you've got one.
Is this the two or the one?
This is the two.
He's got the two.
Oh, you already have all this stuff. Yeah.
So
buried the lead,
dude. I don't know if you can see how much smaller
it is. Wow, look how small it is, yeah.
I mean, it's tiny.
It is little.
Yeah. Like, this is... Or I guess it's over here. This, you know, this is not 90% of the size. It's like 70% or whatever that, you know. It's very small. I mean, that makes it more portable.
It's good for portability, right? It's nice. The size is nice for portability. But I tried to get it to work for me, and it just is too – the keyboard is too cramped. I can't.
Yeah. So I'm going to – look, it doesn't – I can't review this thing effectively. I'm too enormous. So, well, I mean, my options are, if I wanted to use it as a computer, I could use it with a Bluetooth keyboard, which is okay. I have a really nice ThinkPad one. That's not how most people are going to do this, right? But it would help me understand the performance, you know, whatever. I'm also considering just using it as a secondary device where it's literally for the way I use an iPad. I'll read news on it in the morning. I could watch movies on it. You know, have it over by the couch at night if I want to look something up on the internet, something like that. The problem for this device is that iPad does exist. iPad is thinner. It's lighter. It gets way better battery life. It has a way better software ecosystem and hardware ecosystem. And it's less expensive. I mean, I really don't know how to approach this.
I know. So they say it's for K-8, right? Yeah. But they also say it's for business customers. Like it's not just K-8. It ships Windows 10 Home in S mode, right? For consumers and Windows 10 Pro for businesses, maybe, or Windows 10 Home, just plain Windows 10 Home. They think some business customers will take it. Like people who don't do a lot of typing, heavy typing, somebody who's like a salesperson who needs to just send back one line emails when he's on the road or she's in her car doing something. For that group of people, it might be okay, especially the one with built-in LTE, right?
Maybe. I still believe that a normal computer, even if you had to tether your phone, it was bigger and whatever, would be better for most people. But the other thing, actually, you should do this now while you're looking at this. If you spec this thing out, so you get the M3 processor, you're going to get, I believe that you just automatically at that point get 8 gigs of RAM and SSD storage. So this is what I would call kind of minimally acceptable as from a performance perspective, right? That's the version they sent out for review. The version they sent out for review also has LTE, which is kind of interesting. If you add a type cover and a pen to this, it's $1,000.
I know.
So it's tough.
I know it's tough. It is tough because you can get a better PC for under $1,000.
Yeah, a much better PC. And, you know, I obviously I understand the appeal of a cost reduced Surface device. There are people who love this brand and want to own one of these computers and maybe they're just too expensive. Although I feel like Surface Pro 7 or whatever is often on sale where it's a good deal. The size constraints, I just think, are a huge problem for most people. And, you know, even like a kid that was going to use this thing, even if they had to type into Word occasionally, be better off getting an iPad and just getting a keyboard for that. in most cases, you know. But we'll see. I'm gonna try. I mean, I'm not going on trips, so I can't bring it on a trip. But I would never bring this as my computer on a trip. Can you imagine me trying to type on this?
Is the M3? I mean, that was one of the problems I had with the Pentium Gold. Was it just was really sluggish? Is the M3 decent?
It seems fine so far. I've only had it for a day or two. Microsoft says it's a 64% improvement over the previous Pentium Gold.
Right.
It's a low bar. So what's 64% of zero? You know, I mean, it's honestly, it seems okay. It's on a screen this big and it's on a keyboard that's too small for me to type on. And, you know, I mean, I'm like hunched over it. Like it's an awkward thing for someone of my size, unfortunately.
Who buys Microsoft Surface devices? Really?
A lot of businesses do now.
Is it because of the Microsoft name? I mean, I'm just thinking there's a lot of competition from Dell and Lenovo and HP. There's some really nice systems from those manufacturers.
Yeah, but there's some really nice systems from Surface too. I mean, I think they're right up there. They've got that, you know, they're trying to compete with Apple, obviously, in the premium space. I think there is, look, they're not as big as Apple in this regard, but I mean, it's pretty well respected other than the Thunderbolt 3 thing you raised.
I feel like by the third generation of most of these products, they have something that's like stands up pretty well against the other OEMs. Like Surface Laptop 3, I didn't expect to like it, and I liked it more than anything else I tried. So I'm like, okay.
That's what you own.
It's a beautiful laptop. But the other thing you got to give Microsoft credit for is everyone holds up the MacBook Air as this iconic design. They forget it was Gen 2. The first one was terrible. But that MacBook Air became the model for Ultrabooks and is still today probably the most widely copied design, you know, in modern PC history. Well, Microsoft kind of did the same thing with Surface Pro. Once they got to Surface Pro 3x2 screen, that exact form factor, it's a tablet first, tablet that can replace your laptop, et cetera, not lappable, as Mary Jo may have heard. But every PC maker on earth has copied that design, every one of them.
Yeah.
So they did something right. I mean, they've been trying to hit the second home run, and they've had some singles and doubles, you know, since then. But, you know, making something iconic is not easy. And sometimes, if you're lucky, even it only happens once.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's why the Surface Go looks exactly like the one thing they had that was a blockbuster, right? I mean,
right.
It should be bigger.
Yeah. I think that's it's answer. A little Surface Pro. It's a Surface Pro Mini.
Baby
that's
Surface
what it
Pro.
Is.
Yeah.
Well, you got the other thing that the other thing that's hard to remember is that's the bigger Surface Pro that I compared it to. That's not even a 13-inch screen. That's a 12.5-inch screen. That thing is itself pretty small.
Yeah, that
you
is
know?
Small.
I mean, and granted, they have 13, like the Dell XPS 13 is like a 13-inch display and what is essentially an 11-inch form factor. I mean, you can you can scrunch these things in a little bit, but
I'm actually really happy with the XPS 13.
Yeah, it's a beautiful
machine.
It's
really nice.
So what else? Surface Book 3.
Not much to say. It's a new processor, Book. Same thing. I love Surface Book. I love it. I mean, it's, you know, modern.
Do you have
modern,
the two? I forget. You do have it, right?
Yeah, I use it every day. Yeah. I love it.
That's your laptop of choice.
Yeah, when I go upstairs, there's two laptops I actually switch between, but I Surface, like when I'm working on the book, Surface Book 2.
I do like the 3x2 aspect ratio. That, to me, is one of the only unique things in the mix, but it is unique, and I do like it.
It's taller.
I like it now. I used to hate it.
It's good for text. It's good for code, too, if you're a developer or a Visual Studio. You know, you get more lines of code. It's nice. Some of the peripheral stuff I think is interesting that they did. The Surface Dock 2 gets rid of all of the like the DisplayPort type connectors, and it's all USB-C now. Mm-hmm. That's kind of interesting. I think it's $250. It's not inexpensive, but you know, again,
$260.
It works through the Surface Connect connector, and then the USB-C travel hub. That was the one surprise. It's a USB travel hub. There's not much to say about it, but whatever. They have new keyboards and keyboard sets, right? The keyboards that come with mice. I was thinking I use a, I think it's called the Sculpt, Microsoft Sculpt ergonomic keyboard and mouse. They're wireless. I love them. They require a dongle, which I hate. I looked at this new one. I thought I'll go look at this online. It's wired. It's a wired keyboard.
Oh, it is? Wow.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm not buying a wired keyboard. That's crazy.
Is it maybe because of the backlit keys? Is that why?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know why. I stopped looking. That was like the end of that. I saw the wire and I was like, all right. I don't have enough places to plug stuff in.
Yeah.
Surface headphones too. That was a little bit of a surprise, right? We didn't really.
I think the rumor came out last week.
Okay, so it was a recent.
Because they went through FCC, I think, or something. So.
Yep.
You can get the headphones in black now.
You know, you can't get them in. It's what? Xbox compatibility mode. They don't work with Xbox.
Oh wow! Really interesting.
Yeah. Goofy. Unless you. I guess if you used a wire, it would work. Obviously, you could just plug it in. But, yeah. I mean, they don't connect to the Xbox. That's unbelievable.
That's interesting.
Does the Xbox
$250
Does the Xbox do what, Leo?
Bluetooth?
Yeah. The new, yeah. You do it through the controller.
It doesn't work
with
the Surface headphones?
Nope.
I don't, no, it's crazy. I don't understand.
Yeah, nobody does. it's just, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, Microsoft.
And the earbuds. The earbuds are out, earbuds. Finally.
And
they're
by the way,
a little cheaper.
This, yeah, I was just going to say, that's good. $200
$200 instead of $250
Should never buy
otherwise,
this. There's so many companies make earbuds.
I just want to try them. I do. I'm curious about them. I think they're hideous. But I want to
try. They look like they should have those dream catcher things hanging from them. They're like enormous. You know?
They're really
big. They
look
like gauges.
They're like platters.
They look like gauges here. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I have two generations of Samsung Galaxy Buds, and they're amazing.
Great. Actually, and they're cheaper.
Lot cheaper. Yeah.
Very happy with the Galaxy Buds. Yeah.
Yep. They work great.
Yeah.
And they don't look like gauges.
Right. I know.
Yep.
It's weird.
So yeah, there was a lot of stuff. Everything is available pre-order today, and everything is going to ship this month.
Yeah.
Most of it next week, which is pretty good. Oh, can we play the Panos video? There was a 1 minute Panos.
Is it really only a minute long? I was going to say, we're not going to play the whole thing, are we?
It's like 1 minute. Where it's like literally.
Where is it?
It's in the notes. Where we say Panos.
Okay.
Right under the Surface earbuds.
Oh yeah, Panos in his flow, man.
He's super pumped.
His flow. Today we introduced. Hi, Panos. Hey, how you doing? He's in his paneled study there.
Yeah, I bet that thing switches around. And it's a secret room.
I feel like he maybe is renting or leasing because there's no pictures on the wall. There's
that's
nothing.
Weird.
I bet that's his place.
Hey, everyone. I hope you're all safe and well. And while I wish I was with you right now face to face to tell you the story of every detail and every part of these products, and I can't be, I am super pumped to introduce you today to the new Surface lineup, the Surface Book 3, the Surface Go 2, the Surface Headphones 2, and finally, the Surface Earbuds, and they're amazing. Each one of these products, just as you'd expect, meticulously crafted. Every detail thought through, the integration with Teams and Office and Windows brought to you to help these products disappear into the background so you can create the masterpiece you want to create. And even right now in these changing times where we are finding new ways to learn, new ways to connect, new ways to create.
Hi, Daddy, I have a question.
Okay, I'm filming. It's okay. Actually, come here. Say hi. Say hi.
Show everybody your tattoos.
Hi.
Okay.
Even as the world around us is changing and we need to adapt to it every day, these products were made to adapt to you. They're made to keep you in your flow.
Flow!
I hope you love these products. Give them a shot. Take a look at the blog post and you can pre-order today.
Okay, Daddy, can I go now? Are you done? Okay. So was that staged? Because I noticed she did have a Surface with her. What the hell is this thing behind him? What is that?
Right.
I don't know.
Okay.
They almost look like post-up notes.
Yeah. This is the post-it
sticky
note that Bill gave me when he first invited me to the
There's way too much wood in this room. I got to talk to him about
there's
the
wood,
design.
There's wood, but it feels like it should have bookshelves or paintings or something.
Yeah.
But this is a design statement. So you think that the kid that was staged?
Yeah, that was staged.
Okay. I don't have a problem with that, but yes, I'm filming. I think it was.
It's okay. Actually, come here. Say hi.
Because she does have in her hands a go. Right.
Or she does.
Even as the
it's probably one of those chains attached to our wrist, like seeing a movie when a guy's a briefcase.
Why is there no Thunderbolt port on this go, Daddy?
I was trying. Yeah. The transfer speeds are so slow when I plug in a Thunderbolt hard drive. Oh, it doesn't even work. It's
Daddy?
I wondered if he was going to say flow, and he did.
He did.
He had to throw
is that
in
his
there.
Trademark word?
Pumped
I noticed the girl
flow.
Had a full-size Surface and not a Surface Go. That's interesting.
Oh, she didn't have a Go. It was a regular one.
Yeah.
Oh.
It might be an unannounced product in
Even
her hands.
Even she is too small for a Surface for Go. Oh, that's interesting.
Anyway, that's the only bit of Panos we get for today.
Okay, I'm filming. It's okay. Actually, come here.
Say like hi. We rehearsed it. Okay. Take three. Mm-hmm.
Hi. Okay.
Yeah, it's a regular full size.
Even as the world around us.
The best part about this video.
We need to adapt to it.
Yeah. Said he's wearing an $8 Amazon polo shirt.
They're made to keep you in your flow.
But lots of jewelry. I like the jewelry.
I hope you love these products.
What is that? Is that an ID?
Give him a shot.
He's got,
take
he's got
a look
gold
at the blog post and
neck.
You can pre-order today.
I think he always does.
Bye.
Yeah. Maybe wave.
Maybe wave. Okay. Yeah, I don't want to make fun of it.
No.
Although I say
it's hard to do those things.
The
right?
Skype, like, the Skype Room Raider would give him probably 4, maybe 5 out of 10. Yeah. You know, there's just like it's just wood standing in front of wood.
He didn't want to be any distractions.
That's right. It's
the
clean. That's right. It's really clean.
Right.
That's cool. Good for you. That's how we're all doing it now. It's really strange to be able to see into people's houses.
It is.
We've always been able to see into your houses, but.
Yeah.
Well, but these are the guys. We don't usually see their houses.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Right.
Build 2020. What is the deal with this year's build?
It's going to be all about developers.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And not a show for the media, right? Oh. It's like it's been recently.
Will
I feel
they stream
like.
A keynote?
The keynote will be streamed.
So we can cover that, right?
Yep.
Would you like to join us for that since you will be not there?
We're going to also be doing the post keynote again.
Oh, you
like
are?
We do traditionally.
Oh, really? You're still going to do that, huh? Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to get some Twit mic flags.
Yeah. We should wear something. Some
Twit swag.
Like pin or something.
Yeah, no, it's okay. You don't have to. Yeah. They know who you are.
They do. And the best news is the Satya note is going to be short. Satya's going to give a short keynote, we hear.
This is next month? This is June?
No, this is May 19th,
May 19th?
Right?
Oh, it's coming up.
Yeah. May 19th, short keynote. We might not even have to hear the words digital transformation. I don't know. I think that's a big promise. I really do. But much more focused around developer news, like Scott Hanselman's going to be giving one of the keynotes, and they're going to be doing lots of demos about tools and services that people can use and that they're introducing in the near term. Like, it's not going to be as futuristic, except day two is going to be the future stuff, I guess, right? So Kevin Scott, who's the CTO on day two keynote on the 20th, will talk about like AI and machine learning and that kind of stuff. Yeah. I have to say, I'm not a developer, but I'm very happy about this change. I think Build was supposed to be a developer's show, and it's good to see it going back to what it was meant.
Yeah. So it's a two-day streaming only.
Two-day, virtual event. We know some of the speakers, Hanselman, Scott Guthrie. Oh, this is an interesting one. Rajesh Jha is going to speak. He almost never speaks at events. He is the head of Windows client and Surface, Microsoft 365 all up. So he almost never gives keynotes. He's going to be speaking. Kevin Scott, Peter Lee, the head of research, and Satya. But like they're going to talk about Windows Terminal and Linux and GitHub and all that kind of stuff. WinUI, you know, real developer meat.
My son has an issue I need to deal with.
Does he have a Surface Book that you can show us?
No. Sorry. I'll just be a minute.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
No problem.
Okay. Go ahead.
It's security. It's fine. Security problem.
Nope. No worries.
There's a deer on the front lawn.
Exactly.
A coyote in the bathroom.
There could be. Did you see Stephanie, Paul's wife today, posted a picture on her walk of a bald eagle, giant bald eagle.
That was a stunning picture.
I know. I was like, what?
The bald eagles are back, baby.
I know.
Okay. I'm back. I'm sorry. Sorry. My son had an account problem where he was hacked and I have the.
Oh, dear.
Way to get into it.
Oh, dear. Anyway,
he's okay. I'm sorry. So we actually have bald eagles in our neighborhood, and you can't take pictures of them because they're usually so far away, but she has that Samsung camera now. She did like a super zoom in and was able to get it.
That's cool.
It was like so detailed. Like you could even see the individual feathers on his wing.
Yeah, yeah. Those birds are enormous.
They're gorgeous though. Yeah. They're really pretty.
Yeah, it was nice.
So 8 a.m. Pacific, May 19th, shortly thereafter, Paul and Mary Jo will do their from their homes. This is kind of cool.
I know it is. Like we'll all be doing it from remote locations.
Wow.
I know.
And is it just Satya on that keynote, or there'll be other things too?
Well, it's hard to tell, right? So on the day one, I think it's going to be Satya, Scott Hanselman. I don't know if Guthrie will be that day or Ajesh Jha, but yeah. It's going to be a few people, I think. I think how it worked in the past was Satya would do his thing, and then there'd be a break, and then they'd have technical keynotes and breakouts after that. I don't know if they'll follow that same format or not this time.
Well, I guess I'll be coming in early on that Tuesday.
Yeah.
8 a.m.
I think it'll be good.
Center square to block.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you want to be part of it, it's free, obviously. And,
that's what I like. I bet you this is the new standard for these developer conferences. Why, why make them so exclusive? You want everybody to go. Apple's doing the same with WWDC. Yeah. Google canceled theirs, but I presume they'll do something sometime. Why not make it everybody? Do it streaming, right?
They have a registration site for Build. So if you register, I guess you'll get more information, et cetera. Good. Yeah.
Well, we'll stream the keynote. We won't be able to stream with you because you'll be, in the green room getting excited and ready.
The green room of my house.
Virtual green rooms. Yeah.
But we'll be doing that. And then I think we'll still have to go to iOS today immediately afterwards, so it'll be interesting. Good. Tuesday, May 19th, 8 a.m. Yep. Be there. Now you could go even if you don't register, but if you register, you'll get something.
I guess you'll
get a t-shirt.
Something.
Yeah.
Maybe. We don't really know.
I don't know. Okay. But you don't have to register to watch the whole thing.
No.
Which is cool. And there won't be any products. I mean, they just did their Surface thing, so there's no. Yeah,
I think there'll be still some new news type stuff, right? Like maybe services and tools. But in the past, they've tried to make it this showcase, right?
That,
so people could compare them to Apple and Google and like who had the coolest demos and who had the most stuff. No. I think that's kind of over.
It's over.
Yeah.
It's over.
It's better. They're making it for the audience that it was supposed to be for, which is developers.
I agree. You know the irony? This happened with Windows or with the MacBreak Weekly too. Both Microsoft and Apple announced their quarterly results, and it's like nobody's like normally we would leap on that.
Yeah.
Yep.
What? Let's for completeness' sake, anything of interest?
On earnings. Teams is up to 75 million daily active users. They said that on the earnings call. Up from 44 million in March. So it's almost doubled.
Wow. That is a lot.
Yeah. I thought for me, another piece of interesting news was they admitted they are having some supply chain problems in Asia, not just for PCs and Xbox, but also for server components. So you know how they've been having capacity issues on Azure? It may be at least in part because they haven't been able to get enough server components to build more servers for their data centers. So I thought that was kind of an interesting admission on their side. I don't know. Anything else, Paul, that you did a whole piece
I did a piece specifically just about the consumer stuff, which is Windows, Office, Xbox, obviously, and Surface. Surface didn't perform very well, you know, frankly. And we can blame COVID, I guess. But, I mean, that was only one of those months. Xbox, they talked about a lot of metrics around the Game Pass, which was kind of interesting. Actually, I'll talk about that a little bit later. But obviously, Xbox is not doing great, other than the fact that people are home and playing more games. And so software sales were up and the services sales were up. But, you know, whatever. Yeah. The Windows thing is kind of interesting. The commercial products and cloud services part of it grew 17%. Mm-hmm. But the consumer part of it fell 10%.
Right.
And that's non-pro, I guess we'll call it. Windows Pro from PC makers was only up 5%, you know. So I don't think those were great numbers, frankly. I mean, I think what happened was people went home to work and they just worked with what they had. You know, I don't think there was a lot of buying going on or whatever.
Yeah.
And then where was, I feel like that should have been first, but it wasn't. Office, where is that?
Oh, yeah. Office commercial is up to 258 million paid seats. Office consumer, 36.9 million. So, yeah, that's still pretty strong business for them. And, of course, commercial cloud was up. The most – actually, we're kind of burying the lead in a way because the most interesting part of earnings was how great they did and how in their guidance they're thinking they're going to have another great quarter next quarter.
My initial thing was the first thing – like very early on in the press release, COVID-19 had minimal net impact on the total company revenue. Yeah. Yep. Really? Because you have talked about nothing but COVID-19 for the past 3 months.
But it was mostly in the third month of the quarter. I mean, it wasn't.
It was. Yeah. It was.
Yeah.
But in their guidance, they said they think business is going to be strong across the cloud again. Yeah. And, you know, they said LinkedIn advertising is going to be off. Search and advertising, I think they said off.
Right.
And SMB businesses will be weak, but all their big things, gaming services, Microsoft 365, Office 365, Dynamics 365, they think it's all going to be really strong again in the coming quarter.
I think this speaks to the diversity of Microsoft's businesses.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you're glad you're not all advertising, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
or all hardware, right? I mean, this is... I think this is one of the ways in which today's Microsoft is a much stronger company, not just because it's bigger overall, but because it can withstand hits to certain parts of the business because other parts can pick up the slack.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, the three big major business units were all about the same size again, but not surprisingly, Intelligent Cloud was the one that kind of rose above the others, not dramatically, but they were all roughly $11 billion last quarter. That business was $12.3 billion this quarter, and the productivity and business processes, which is largely cloud-based, was $11.7 billion. So
they did say expect them to have some massive capital expenditures on data centers in the coming quarter, which is not surprising because of capacity and more cloud demand.
Yep.
I know. It's really amazing that in spite of everything that's going on, they can be like, you know what? We think we're going to do okay next quarter.
Right.
But yeah, diversifying the business. That's the name of the game. Yeah, otherwise I think that was all for earnings. It was like, great quarter, guys.
Yeah, not a lot of news.
a ton of news up.
I think we were.
Well, I mean, Apple had a great quarter. I mean, these gigantic techs, even like, you know, Google is worried about advertising, which they should be. But these companies are so big. They can all operate almost on inertia.
God, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Email the rest of us slowly.
I know. We're hoping we're running out of this check in the mail.
Yeah, running out of steam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Do you want to do any Xbox stuff before we take our final break here?
Yeah, I feel like I'm missing something. I didn't write this myself, but today Microsoft announced the games that are coming to Game Pass for the second half of the month. And I'm just looking at my site to see if I think Mahedi might have written it up. Yeah, so the big one there is Red Dead Redemption 2 is coming to Game Pass. And I think that's on PC and console. So that's good. And then Halo 2 is coming to PC for the first time. I think it might be next month, but it's this month as part of that Halo Master Chief Collection where they're remastering and redoing the games. So that's happening. That's not in the notes. But so as part of their announcement, the quarterly financial announcement, Microsoft announced that they now have more than 10 million subscribers to Xbox Game Pass. That's really interesting. I don't know that they ever announced a figure for Game Pass before. They say that it's a 42.8% increase in the number of monthly active users year over year for Xbox Live, which has, I'm having trouble finding numbers. I want to say that was close to 75 million. It was 63 million active users a year ago. So that's actually a pretty healthy percentage. 10 million out of 70, whatever the exact figure is, 70 something million, are paying. In other words, they've upsold, right? So if you think of Game Pass, and there are actually three tiers of it, as more expensive versions of Xbox Live Gold, which they kind of are, they've actually gotten a pretty good percentage of the customer base to upgrade, I guess, upsell. The question is whether this is a temporary thing. I would imagine a lot of people are like, I'm going to be home for a few months. I think I'll buy a 3-month pass to Xbox Game Pass and see how it goes.
Yeah, that might be what it is. I was tempted to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of hard to say, obviously. But this figure, it will be interesting to see a year from now, I guess, if they talk about this number again. I bet they don't.
Yeah.
You know?
Interesting. Is this the only time they've done that?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. Mm-hmm. And I think it was part of the, this is why everything's okay with COVID, you know, for us with COVID. Because obviously they don't have anything to talk about with console sales, you know. Yeah. So software and services were the thing that helped Xbox this quarter. And this was a chunk of that, I guess.
All right, let's take a little break. And then the back of the book coming up. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. COVID may be here, but Windows goes on and on and on. Windows Weekly never stops. A lot of people moving to the cloud. Now's the time, by the way. This is, for one thing, cloud storage has gotten so affordable, if you find the right company, that it's in many cases less expensive than buying on-premises storage. I'm talking about Wasabi, hot cloud storage. David Friend, the founder and CEO, told me a story about they're based in Boston, a Boston-based high-rise that put security cameras in all over the high-rise. And they started, you know, a lot of data coming out of those security cameras. They started buying hard drives and then more hard drives and more hard drives. Pretty soon they realized we never can keep up. We can't keep up. They went to Wasabi, and you know what they found out? It's actually less expensive to go with Wasabi, 80% cheaper than Amazon S3, by the way. So I probably wouldn't be the case with anybody else. But with Wasabi, it's actually cheaper than buying on-premises storage. In fact, typically, you could store data in Wasabi's cloud for less than just the annual maintenance fees on the same amount of on-prem storage. Wasabi's the perfect solution for anybody with a lot of data, anybody thinking of moving to the cloud. If you're a managed service provider and you sell cloud, you'll love Wasabi because you could charge less and still make more money. Wasabi's disruptive price performance model makes buying cloud storage just natural. There are two ways to go. You can pay as you go, $5.99 per terabyte per month, just flat fee, not complicated tier. You know, S3 has like 800 tiers and all that. None of that. They don't charge for egress, so that's, you know, there's no cost there. They don't charge for API access. And by the way, their API is the same as S3's. So you already have lots of tools that can use it. You might even be able to, you might already be using S3 with your own code, and it would still work. And it's still 80% cheaper than Amazon S3. So you can pay as you go. That's one way to go. You can make it even less expensive. If you know, for instance, if you've got security cameras, you know you're generating a terabyte a month or whatever, you can pay one time with reserved capacity storage. Pay up front. Wasabi's reserved capacity storage makes buying cloud storage a natural addition to your on-prem storage because it kind of looks the same, feels the same, right? When you buy on-prem, you're buying ahead. You're buying more storage than you need at a fixed cost. And you know that, you know, this is going to last 6 months, a year. You can, if you're thinking about buying more hardware, compare the price against 5 years of reserved capacity storage. You'll see it's much more affordable. And by the way, you don't have to buy 5 years. You can do increments of 1, 3, or 5 years. Great discounts for term and capacity. Let me tell you some more about Wasabi. It's I honestly think its security is better than anything you can do on premises. First of all, because they're in multiple tier 4 data centers, they're highly secure, and they're fully redundant. So you get 11 nines of durability. 11 nines, that's as high as you can get. In fact, they even do active integrity checking. All the objects stored on Wasabi's cloud are checked for integrity every 90 days, so you're never going to lose not even one bit. It's secure by default. All data is encrypted at rest, even if you don't set it that way. It just does it. They follow industry best security models and practices. They have access control mechanisms, bucket policies, ACLs, so you can control who has access to what. My favorite feature is it's immutable data. So you can set it up so that your data can't be modified by ransomware, by hackers, by fumble-fingered employees. It's immutable. It cannot be changed. And in a lot of cases, that's the single thing you want most in the face of ransomware. Wasabi is awesome. HIPAA compliant, FINRA client compliant, CJIS compliant. It is highly secure, disruptive technology that's changing the cloud industry. It's turning it on its ear, and it's 80% cheaper and up to 6 times faster than the industry leader. Look, you got to check it out. Calculate the savings for yourself. You could start a trial for free storage for a month when you go to wasabi.com, W-A-S-A-B-I.com. Click the free trial link, enter the code Windows, bang on it for a little bit. You'll get a sense of the speed, the reliability. They have all the features you're looking for. And as I said, API is S3 compliant. Same thing. And no charge for egress or API access. Join the movement. Migrate your data to the cloud with confidence. I know it's a new name to a lot of us, but I know these guys. I'm very impressed with what they've done. And, you know, sometimes it's the small, you know, upstart that changes the game entirely. And I think that's what's happening with Wasabi. W-A-S-A-B-I. Go to wasabi.com. And don't forget to use the offer code Windows so they know you saw it here. Wasabi.com. Now, Paul Thurrott. We'll kick things off, back of the book, the tip of the week.
Yeah, actually, I'll give you two tips, both related to chapters I just updated in the Windows 10 field guide. There is some confusion about whether Microsoft is making it impossible in Windows 10 version 2004 to sign in with an offline account when you first sign into the computer. And so the story is that if you connect to a network, and then you go to sign in, it doesn't offer you that offline choice, which is the local account. And then some people have said, actually, they don't do that anymore. Maybe it's only in Pro. Maybe it's only in Home. In my experience, you only see this problem in Windows 10 Home. And you can bypass it really easily. You just need to know the trick, which is this, where it says to enter your Microsoft account or phone number, enter 555-555-5555, and it will say, hey, that doesn't look like a real phone number. And then it will, then one of the choices will be use an offline account. So you can get by it. The other one is
that you have to do that, but okay, fine.
But you should know about it. So yeah. The other one is I updated the Edge chapter, which is obviously kind of a big deal because Microsoft Edge is an all new application. And for anyone who's interested in this, the previous chapter was about 10,000 words long, and this one's only about 7,200 words long because the old Edge had a lot more unique features in it than the new one does. The new one just works like Chrome, which is fine. But one of the new unique features is collections. And Collections is kind of like a, it's almost like a playlist feature for research. Like you're going to buy a car or some other object, or you're researching a trip maybe, and you want to collect everything into one area. It's better than bookmarks because you can, in addition to collecting web pages, which you can do, of course, and they give you nice little thumbnails and blurbs and things. You can arbitrarily drag in images from any web page. You can select an item of text and drag that in. You can add your own notes. You can share them with others in various ways. They, if you're on a, I think it's the beta version, it will sync between your computers, but that's coming soon to everybody. So it may be the one major new feature that's unique to Microsoft Edge. And it is, you know, I kind of went back and forth on it from a, like a strategy perspective, whether this thing should be built into the browser or whether they should have used some of their existing technology like OneNote or To-Do or something. I guess we could make those arguments, but it's worth looking at. It's actually, it's interesting. So do get the book. Those chapters have been updated.
Now with more Edge.
Yeah. And app pick wise, I have three different picks. Firefox was updated this week to version 76. They've added a password protection feature, which actually is also available in Microsoft Edge, where if Mozilla discovers that one of your passwords is out in the dark web, they will warn you and then you can go and change it. So it's kind of a neat little cloud service that will help protect you against hackers. That's kind of unrelated to security features directly in the browser, but is more associated with your Firefox account, I guess, Mozilla account or whatever it is. That's cool. And then I was surprised by this. Over a year ago, Microsoft announced that they were bringing Forza Street, which is the mobile version of their Forza game series, to Android and iOS. At that time, they brought it to Windows 10. This week, they brought it to Android and iOS. So it's, I don't know why it took so long. But if you like racing games, I will say racing games to me are one of the few kind of mobile games that makes sense as far as like a real game, you know, like not like a puzzle game or a runner type game. That's another one to check out. And then last week I mentioned that Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 Campaign Remastered was coming out. This week I'm telling you that I've already finished it. And
wow.
I gotta tell you, this game is awesome. Oh, it's awesome.
Nostalgia.
And it is, it's 10, 11 years old, I think. It looks awesome. The story is amazing. It's an interactive story, really, right? So it's only the campaign, so it's only single player. But I've heard now that hackers that have looked at the code in this game have discovered that the spec ops and multiplayer missions are there.
Hmm.
And this has, you know, makes us believe now that they will release these. So one thing I started doing since I finished this was looking at the original Modern Warfare 2 multiplayer. And it's hard to play because it's so low res, but those levels are awesome, and I hope they do release that. But even if they don't, like, the single player is amazing. And if you forgot, like, what a good Call of Duty single player game was like, this is it. Like, it's incredible.
I tried to get it, but you have to own the game.
Get what?
The Call of Duty refresh. Is that what you're talking about?
This is the remastered version of Modern Warfare 2.
Yeah.
You buy it. Yes. It's a standalone game.
Oh, because it said, maybe I was looking at the wrong thing. It said you have to own Call of Duty. So it's not just downloadable content.
Maybe this was like something for, no, this is a standalone game.
It's standalone. Oh, good. Because, I wanted to play it.
It's awesome.
Especially since there's no 13-year-olds in there. It's really dark from a distance.
This is like the Empire Strikes Back of the series. It's the United States gets attacked by Russia and a lot of street fighting in like suburban America. So it's kind of like the old Call of Duty games, you were like fighting in streets in France in the 1940s, but now you're doing it in Mary, you know?
Good,
it's
really interesting. That's just what I'm looking for. A completely dystopian future. Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah. Good guys. Well, actually the ending is ambiguous and it's the second of a trilogy, so the story gets wrapped up in Modern Warfare 3. I'll ruin the end.
Spoilers.
The good guys win.
The good guy. No, you spoiled it. Who's the good guys? I don't know. Are there dogs in this one? No.
Oh yes, you get attacked by dogs. Yep. You gotta tap the right stick, or you twist the thing's neck.
I'm gonna download it right now. I must have been looking at the wrong thing. I thought it looked like DLC, then I had to have the game. But
yeah, no.
Okay,
this is a standalone game.
Oh, good.
Nice. Yeah, that's awesome.
I guess that wasn't your enterprise pick of the week.
No. Well, it could be.
Depends on what your enterprise is all about.
Mary Jo. Are the dogs the enterprise pick of the week?
Mary Jo Foley.
No, they're cats.
Cats. Of course there are.
Enterprise pick number one, Windows Virtual Desktop, the spring refresh.
Ooh, it's so springy.
Don't worry. We're not doing spring and fall like Windows. They just happen to call this one spring. Doesn't mean there'll be a fall. First off, Windows Virtual Desktop is one of Microsoft services that's having a barn burner time since COVID began. That's understandable. They have said recently that there are 6 times more users of Windows Virtual Desktop right now than Microsoft expected to have in the entire year of 2020. A lot of people are using it. But one thing with people who've been using the first version, a lot of people have complained about lack of management capabilities of WVD. So the spring refresh integrates more tightly WVD with the Azure portal. So you can do things like host pools, manage apps and desktops and assign users all from within the Azure portal now. That's in beta test at the moment. They also are improving the capabilities of Microsoft Teams inside of Windows Virtual Desktop by doing something they call AV redirection. So right now, if you try to run Teams virtually through WVD, the performance can be a little iffy, but they're right now improving both video and audio experience for Teams. That's in test and will be available to people to try out this month. And thirdly, if you're a customer who cares about where your data is stored, they're adding location choice for compliance and sovereignty reasons to WVD. So spring refresh, it's a big deal. Lots of kind of nice to have things. Here's a hint, though. Something really big is coming later with WVD, and I don't know what it is yet. I asked Brad Anderson, who is the corporate VP who oversees WVD, and he was like, I don't really want to talk about that yet. Maybe at Ignite. But it has to do something. It has something to do with something called Cloud Managed Desktop. That's all I know for now. So if anybody out there has tips or code names or anything, you know where to find me.
Actually, I don't.
I'm on the internet everywhere.
Enterprise pick number two. Let's all go to Poland.
Let's go to Poland or New Zealand, because both of them are getting Microsoft Cloud Regions. We don't know exactly when. Neither of these places have dedicated Azure and Microsoft 365 cloud regions at the moment, but Microsoft has announced both of them are going to be getting data centers. And I think this is part of Microsoft's plan to try to increase capacity worldwide for Azure. I think they're now up to either 59 or 60 Microsoft cloud regions in the world. They say they have the most cloud regions of any cloud provider, including AWS. I think it depends on how you count a region, but still, they have a lot and they're adding more. So if you're in Poland or New Zealand or want to store your data in either of those places, I don't know. Like I said, I don't know exactly when they're going to be bringing these on, but if you keep your eyes open, you'll soon hear more about when those two regions are coming online.
I want to move to New Zealand.
I've never been there, but I would love to see.
I haven't either. I haven't either, but they have a wonderful prime minister. I hear that.
Yep.
Now, let's talk about beer with a beer name that sounds like word salad. I can't quite put my head around it. What is this beer, Mary Jo?
This beer is called Party Jam Mango, and it's from a brewery called Hermit Thrush that is in Brattleboro, Vermont. So if you happen to watch the Twitch Shelter and Kitchen show Friday night, or have seen it on YouTube. This was
drinking?
My beer.
Oh. Yeah.
It's a very beautiful, like peachy colored beer. What it is a wild ale that has been soured and has mango added. Yum. So it's sour, but it has a nice little fresh mango taste going on. And it really, I thought it would have paired well with the escargot and the chipped beef.
God. Oh, my God.
Which, luckily, I did not have to taste.
You didn't have to do that, yeah. This looks so, it's so funny because, you know, beer doesn't, isn't beer anymore, really. This is,
I know,
just
it's
fermented
really not.
Stuff.
Yeah, lots of things in a can or on tap that are mixed together to make some delicious beverage.
Do they put hops in this stuff or?
Yeah, there's usually hops even in sours, you know, many fewer hops than in an IPA.
Yeah.
But a wild ale, sometimes it can be spontaneously fermented.
The yeast is the wild part.
Right. Yeah. Yeast is in the air. It's everywhere. Yeah. And they can just have it spontaneously ferment that way. But this one, they call it a kettle soured. So I don't know exactly how they make that, but I would assume you're souring it in the kettle.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty good guess.
I think I was kettle soured.
Yeah, you were soured somewhere. Something soured you. Could have been the kettle.
But yeah, anything from Hermit Thrush, any of their sours, if you ever see it, cans or them anywhere you are, try it. Their sours are excellent.
Well, how do you get beer these days?
There are still places that deliver in New York.
You can get beer delivered. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. They deliver it right to our door, and they have a secure drop-off where you show your ID through the glass, and then they drop it.
Can you get obscure stuff like this, though?
Yeah. So there's also a beer store near where I live called City Beer in Midtown that is still open for takeout.
Nice. So
you can go in there and pick your beers and bring them home.
Because a world without beer...
It would be a sad world.
Worth living in.
No.
That's Mary Jo Foley, our beer expert, our cooking expert. You'll find her at allaboutmicrosoft.com. That's where she is. And each Wednesday, you'll find her right here, along with Paul Thurrott from Thurrott.com. Don't forget the field guide to Windows 10, now with more edge, available at leanpub.com.
More new edge. Anyway.
It's edgier.
It's technically it's less edge. Oh. Think about
it. It's less edge, but it's newer.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. It's the book you got to have if you have Windows 10. The Field Guide to Windows 10 from leanpub.com. You pick your price. That's a nice thing. And you get updates. We do this show every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1700 UTC at live. Actually, the live stream is at twit.tv/live. That's live audio or video if you want to listen live. Or you can ask your Amazon Echo or one of your voice assistants, say, just play Twit Live, and usually that's enough to get it started. Anytime, day or night, we're always doing something. In fact, Friday, we're going to do another After Hours. This time, we're going to take advantage of Dick DiBartolo, Mad's maddest writer. He's going to do a match game with some of our hosts. He's been doing that on his Giz Fizz every Saturday afternoon, so that should be a lot of fun. A lot of fun. Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern time, if you want to watch. And then we put it up on YouTube, so you can watch later. But this show is also on YouTube, but it's also at our website, twit.tv/ww. You can subscribe. In fact, I'd encourage you to subscribe in your favorite podcast application. That way you get it automatically the minute it's available on Wednesday afternoon. Paul, what are you laughing at?
I mentioned Paul Lynde earlier. What was the game show he was on in the 70s with the squares?
Yeah, yeah. It was
Hollywood Squares.
Hollywood Squares, yeah.
So I just, this awesome clip. This guy was a genius. He was a genius. But there was a great, you know, they would ask him these impromptu questions and he would just answer like humorously and he was really funny.
Yeah.
So it's like when a guy falls overboard, you say man overboard. What do you say when a woman falls overboard? So he thought about it for a second and he said, full steam ahead.
Oh, jeez.
Nice.
This is amazing. That's amazing. Like just off the cuff, like amazing.
He was very funny. Yeah.
You should look him up. He's
I feel like they kind of wrote some of his material ahead of time. Maybe you think?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. But he was. Oh my God.
Like maybe he was told what the question would be and he'd get to think about it. He was on
Bewitched. That's right.
Yeah.
Ready?
Yeah.
Ready.
Ready.
Hello. My name is Harry Huggins. Is Major Nelson home?
I Dream of Jeannie. And then the center square on Hollywood Square.
Oh, center square, yeah.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
He had a show, the Paul Lynde Show. All right. Well, I'm watching a really ridiculous. Here's Paul Lynde on the Hollywood Square. Some of his
best. There's all kinds of, best of him.
Yeah.
For $500, Paul, true or false, there is now a travel agency that specializes in nude cruises to Europe.
I bet on how they pick the captain.
Okay. It just goes. It's amazing. Hysterical.
I know. I miss that.
It's great.
Thank you, Paul Therott. Thank you, Mary Jo Foley. Thank you all for being here. See you next week on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.